Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Of Leave It in the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, my boxing fans official radio show, Leave It in the Ring. You know what? I lost my concentration here just for a minute because the fact is I'm all pumped up. I got tiger blood here, Gabriel, you know what I'm saying? I'm a winner, dog. A little later, too, we're going to find out of Oscar De La Hoya, who's been rumored to get back in the ring. And some of the names that have been brought up is Saul Canelo Alvarez is a possibility, a possible opponent for Oscar De La Hoya if he gets back into the ring because he's got tiger blood as well. But he's going to clear up the rumors here a little later on Leaving the Ring. We got a good show, a good panel of guests are going to be on here. Some audio, some live interviews. That's how we do it. But we've got plenty of stuff to talk about in boxing. What's up, Gabe? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. I'm having an incredibly busy day, but I'm doing good. I'm, like, simultaneously writing, like, two different articles. But everything's great, man. I'm looking forward to the weekend, man. It's going to be pretty exciting, you know. I mean, the fight card, you know, we'll get to more of a breakdown of it, you know, in Anaheim at the Honda Center, the Golden Boy card. It's kind of a funky card, you know. There's a lot of names on it, but then you look at the other side of the ring, and there's a lot of guys that are just kind of got to, you know, get iced. I don't know if Matthew Hatton will be one of them, but he's certainly outmatched, you know. So it's more like they're kind of rolling out their stars, getting Canelo in Southern California, putting all these big names, I think names that will be big in the future, on one card, which is kind of cool. I wish the fight was a little more competitive, but on some level, I kind of understand why some of them aren't this time around, you know. So we'll get more to that later. But to answer your question, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. You know, like I said, a little pumped up and stuff. I'm making sure that I don't start any fights with a warlock, you know. And I'm just excited too.
I feel like I had some tiger's blood earlier, just because you know, I was. I showed it to you. Well, I guess we can start plugging it now. We're bringing back the show that we had on the radio here. We were advertising it, Fighter versus Writer. I finally got to see the initial clip, like our trailer for it. We're still building the pilot webisode, and it looks really good. I was really, you know, I wasn't surprised because I felt like the taping went well, but man, the editor did a really nice job, and it's all coming together. I kind of want to tweak a few things, but man, I can't wait to show the clip to people because it's Danny Jacobs is our guest, and we have his crew with us, Spank and Darnell, and it was a really good time, and it really shows on the tape, you know. So I'm just kind of high on Tiger's blood, high on Charlie Sheen right now.
Yeah, definitely high on Tiger's blood and Charlie Sheen. Don't start a fight with a warlock. I'm a winner, baby. What kind of drug are you on? Charlie Sheen. But I tell you what. Brandon Rios definitely was on something because he looked great on Saturday night. You know, he brought his A game in Las Vegas against Miguel Acosta. Acosta was definitely having his run, and he was able to get, you know, really stack up the points in the early rounds, which I think a lot of us were, you know, pretty much anticipating that because this was no slouch. This guy knew how to fight. He knew how to box backwards. And, you know, even the commentators were right on point when they said, cornering himself is something he likes to do because he likes to kind of suck you in so he catches you under with a right uppercut like he likes to throw. It's one of his bread and butter punches there. But it backfired just because of the fact that Brandon Rios is such a big kid. This is such a big guy that his game plan is to take the best shots that you give him possible but walk you down and pretty much do what a lot of other traditional Mexican fighters have done in the past, which is kind of take away your confidence, just snag it out of you, you know what I mean, where you finally just go, what else do I need to throw at this kid to stop him from coming forward? And, you know, Miguel, he, you know, you just saw he gassed out. I mean, the guy was a little bit more on his toes. A lot of folks were kind of saying, hey, we seen him against Urbano. He was really good on his toes. He used the ring a whole lot. It was a big size ring, and he was going to do that with Brandon Rios. He tried it, but he did realize that Brandon Rios, when he does corner you, he doesn't shell up. This guy's still young. He's still got good reflexes. How much longer can he take that kind of punishment where he loses the reflexes? Which is, it's to be seen. But when he did corner you up, Gabe, you got to admit, he let his hands go at the right time, at the right moments.
Yeah, I mean, it was impressive, man. Because, I mean, you know, you picked correctly. I picked incorrectly. But for a minute there, I was looking like a genius. You know, after four rounds, really at the end of the third, Acosta, he really hurt Rios badly, man. He had him reeling and kind of, you know, moving around and smiling at him, which always means, you know, the dude's hurt. And then the fourth round, I thought Rios was completely confused. He was backing up, which he never does, trying to box a little bit more. But then he was just kind of on the end of Acosta's punches. And was eating everything. I mean, I think in some sense the fight was too easy early on for Acosta because he was just throwing, and Rios was catching, and by the end of the fifth he was done. He was gassed, and you could see it. And Brandon was not getting a lot of shots in, but what he did get in was mainly to the body. Maybe he'd chop upstairs with a little something something, but he was, you know, generally getting underneath to the rib cage. I think that just sapped the older legs of Acosta, who was also moving a little bit too much, I think, for my taste. He moved a lot in his last fight, but you know, in Namibia, but against Paulus Moses. But that fight only lasted six rounds, and we got to see everything else that happens if you know, the guy stays there and you land your best shot. What happens afterwards? And we found out he gets a little tired, and Rios has got some chin on him, man. I mean, he's just a tenacious dude. He just kept coming forward, and like you said, you're getting that uppercut in there, but really it was the body shots that set up coming up over the top to the head that really did everything for him. And I, to answer your question, I don't know how long he can keep doing this. I mean, these guys with this style have a real short shelf life, you know?
You know,
I mean,
and you're right. Guys with his style have a really short, lifespan in the sport of boxing, but however long it runs, we're going to have to enjoy it, you know. And definitely, you could say that Top Rank is competing with Golden Boy right now because they're in talks of possibly putting Barrera in there. I mean, that's a big talk right now of Brandon Rios getting in with, Antonio the Babyface, Antonio the Babyface assassin Barrera, and it's Marcos Antonio Barrera, which to me is just like, wow, man, I don't know about that, you know. I we got two legends here, you know. Do we got to kill them both all in the same year?
I don't understand why this is happening. It's like, we all are boxing fans. We all know who these people are. We saw their careers kind of end, you know. I mean, we saw Barrera get kind of taken apart by Amir Khan, like last year, right? Or year before last.
Right.
He bleeding all over the place. Everybody blamed the headbutt. I knew it. When he got headbutt, I was like, this dude's going to, they're going to recycle him one more time, at least. And, you know, I don't even know if he really needs the money or why he's still fighting. Maybe he just absolutely loves it. But to me, it just makes no sense. And it's kind of funny. Like, I take it back to, like, when you're arguing about Floyd Mayweather's career, there's always that dude that says, yeah, but, you know, you're biased, you got to be fair. And so you always have to, at least I have to, if I make a criticism about Floyd, I've got to qualify it with a criticism about Manny. And we've been all over Golden Boy for, you know, the mismatches on how low can you go Boxeo and fight at the Living Dead Club and all that. But and also for Marcos Maidana versus, you know, Eric Morales. This is the same situation. Putting Marco Antonio Barrera in with this guy is gonna be dangerous. I think he's far too big for him.
Right.
He's a big 130 pounder anyways. And Barrera, you know, he's an old dude. He's not anywhere near his prime. I mean, if you look back behind him, he'd have to drive back a few blocks to see his prime. It's not even visible in the rearview mirror. And they're going to do this. And to me, what makes more sense is have Maidana and Rios fight. That's a great fight. And have Barrera, you know, if they really need him to fight, have Morales and Barrera fight each other. Why not? You know, let's do it again a fourth time.
Right. See, that's the thing, too, is that, I mean, if you're going to put both these guys back in a big stage and stuff, you know, why not use what they've already have advantage on, which is an audience? You know, you don't have to build these two fighters back up. There's plenty of fight fans out there that would love to see these two old-timers go at it for the last time because it's such a grudge match between these guys. There's no secret. These guys do not like each other. But you're putting them in with young lions with some real tiger blood in them, you know, where they're not going to scratch. They're definitely going to maul your face off, you know. And like I Twitter out to Top Rank, I said, you know, you put in Brandon Rios with Miguel Acosta, which is a top contender, okay, and a champion, and he dismantled him. You know, I mean, was it at ease? No. That's what happens when you put two guys that are on top of the level of their game. You're going to have a back-and-forth war. You're going to have an exciting fight. But now you're literally putting in with Marcos Antonio Barrera to assassinate the guy. So my question is, are you promoting fighters or are you hiring hitmen? Because that's basically what you're putting out there is a contract. And I understand you want to compete with Golden Boy, but this is getting out of hand. You know what I mean? It's like, you bought a black BMW. I'm going to go get me a silver one. You know, there's got to be a point in some time where these two guys got to, you know, these two promotional companies, you got to kind of leave the elementary playground, okay, and get on the basketball court and compete in a different completely level.
Yeah, it's a thing. I mean, I understand, you know, on some level, this is how it's done. You know, you build a guy on a name. But to me, Barrera is so far removed from the consciousness here, you know, of boxing fans and and casual fans who, you know, I don't even know if they were really all that into Marco Antonio Barrera, you know, or Eric Morales. These fights seem very unnecessary to me. And I don't know if the Rios Barrera fight is really actually signed, so, you know, and sealed and delivered. It's been floated out there. We'll see if it actually comes to fruition. You know, Maidana and Morales is actually happening. And what's worse is it's on pay-per-view, although in some ways, that actually might be better because if you don't want to see it, don't buy it, you know?
Don't buy it. But it does have a good undercard, you know?
Yes, it does. It actually does. But, it's got a good undercard fight. It's got a good co-feature.
It's got a good co-feature.
Ricky Wright versus Matthew Macklin, to me, is not.
No. No, definitely, you know.
A bad fight, but it's not. Certainly Action Heroes, it was kind of like, it was kind of more like Inactivity Heroes, you know. Hamlet has been in more action lately than Winky Wright, but to me, I understand the need. You got to build a guy with a pay-per-view draw or a big boxing name in order for him to move up that ladder and become that as well. But Barrera, I mean, it just seems you just got Acosta in a classic fight. I mean, that's a fight I will watch again.
Right.
And
which I have, you know.
That's your next step. Is you're gonna let's go get a dead guy and let's beat him up on TV. Like, why not just take on another good name? Why not end the Cold War and go after Robert Guerrero Katsidas winner? How about that? It just drives me crazy.
You know, it could be this too. You know, and you know, I'm not look. I understand the whole Brandon Rios, you're getting him in with a legend, okay? Where to market him, you're trying to get him into the casual fan homes, okay? The people that normally don't pay for HBO, but they have ESPN2. Those are the kind of homes you're trying to get Brandon Rios' name in there. So I understand that you need to put him in with somebody very marketable. And the possibility of them making up this fight, of them deciding to do this kind of a fight, it could be that they are well aware that they got a guy that has very minimal head movement and gets hit with hellacious shots. I mean, crisp, crystal clear shots into the jaw on the side of the temple. I mean, Acosta, even when the guy was gassed out, was still landing, you know, arm punches. So Top Rank could look at this and go, look, we could put him in with another tough, durable guy, or we can milk this guy a little longer. Let's prolong his career. Let's give him a softie, but a big name. Now, Grammy, I know some folks are going to say, Dave, what? A softie? Antonio Marco Barrera? I'm sorry, guys. You know, Antonio Marco Barrera is just not the same, you know, baby face assassin. There's only so long you can call the guy a baby. you know? And if you are going to call him a baby, let's not remember, every baby gets spanked. Some get spanked a little harder than others.
Yeah, dude, I don't see – I want to see competitive fights. And Rios is a guy that shows that he's a true competitor. That Acosta fight, he started to bend, and then, you know, he came on back. You know, and show that he couldn't break, you know. And to me, that's a guy that, okay, I understand you got to take maybe a step back because he just had a serious war. But, I mean, you know, Marco Antonio Barrera, to me, it's just kind of insulting to the fans because, like I said before,
oh, yeah.
We all know. We all saw his last few fights. And, you know, I don't know if you watched his last fight, but, I mean, he was fighting a guy that had no business, you know, being
right
in the ring with him. It seemed like he was happy to get knocked out. It was like an honor. Oh, you know, thank you for blowing me out. I always wanted to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you for proving me wrong. Thank you for letting
yeah
me know I didn't have a chance, you know.
Seriously, I always wanted to meet you. It's too bad it had to be like this, you know. I mean, the guy was 15-1, you know, and against, you know, limited opposition. He just got lambasted. I mean, it was one of those fights where you watch and you go, how did this guy end up on TV? Like, every once in a while you see an actor that's just awful, and they kind of stick out, and you're like, how did that guy get on? And you see Arias, and it's like, he's moving around the ring, and you're like, did they just kind of make up his record and just kind of send him in there? Or it was bad. And you know, I just don't really understand. I mean, Barrera's fought four times in 3 years.
Right.
And now you're going to throw him in with a guy that is in his prime. He's a stone cold killer. It's just sooner or later this kind of thing is gonna backfire. And again, I understand, but it's dangerous. You know, he's 37 years old.
Yep.
Yeah. If Khan was able to make him look like that, and I don't think Khan's all that. His speed is what makes his power great, or very good. But with Rios, that's real bone crunching, kind of, you know, organ destroying kind of power, you know, where he just really digs into you, ruins your body, and then just puts you out.
And Barrera's not a 135 pounder too. That's the other thing, is that he's going to bring in, he's going to be coming in with some extra padding of fat, not muscle. And you know, Brandon Rios is going to definitely be a plastic surgeon, because he's going to end up just swishing that fat around in his body with the body shots that he does throw. I mean, I'm going to tell you this. This is the thing. Is Barrera's going to put up a good fight. You know, he's going to fight for his life with that fight, because with him stepping in with Amir Khan, he had to chase down Amir Khan. Amir Khan was using his speed, and he was using the outside. He was boxing him. But with Brandon Rios, he's not going to have to look for him. You know, Barrera's going to have to basically try to do exactly what he did with Manny Pacquiao in his second fight, which is use the ring and his jab. But with 37 years old legs and being not that active, you got to sit there and go, is his legs going to be conditioned to do something like that again against a young guy at 26 years old, you know, and that's hungry for success, you know? And I see a lot of fight fans right now online on the queue board here, on the switchboard. We'll get right to you right now and stuff. We do got a great show. We got a couple of guests that we haven't announced. You know, we do have, you know, Ricky Hand, Oscar De La Hoya, Canelo, and we got a couple other things in the works here that's going to be here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to patch you in right now. But going back to my point is that it's just a little sad that you see him. He had a successful win over Miguel Acosta, just like, you know, Dornier, who's right now is having a major fight, a much bigger fight with a feud with his family. But they're talking about, you know, him going after another title holder, holding it down. And, you know, it kind of just leaves him out of the loop of what's really happening in the boxing world after a great sensational win over Montiel. You know, that's just, I don't know. I don't get it sometimes in how these guys really look at the sport of boxing.
Yeah, I don't really understand it either. I mean, there was that report that came out. They're going to put him in Atlantic City instead of the Bay Area. You know, that rumor. And it's like,
yeah.
Atlantic City? Like, what? You know, get a rope. I just don't understand. But, you know, we'll see. You know, we'll see what goes down with that.
Well,
what I'm excited about is catching. I'm excited to see the return of James Kirkland this weekend. I don't know about you. Maybe that's
yeah, I am. I am. I'm actually I'm very excited about that, you know, to see how he looks and just see the ferociousness out of that kid when he gets back into that ring. I think, you know, I think the whole world is anticipating about that. I know Oscar De La Hoya and Richard Schaefer and everybody else is really pushing, saying that people were in talks in town about Canelo, but I think it has a lot to do, too, with the buzz of James Kirkland returning back to the ring. What do you say there, Gabe?
What the trip with him is, I could tell he's focused. We actually didn't do an interview leading into this fight, which is kind of rare for us. And we talked kind of intermittently a couple times, but I kind of know just from the past that when it comes down to the week of the fight, he shuts off the phone. He doesn't like to do anything but focus in on the weight and training and what he's got to do. And we talked like briefly, but you know, he, like yesterday we talked and then we ended up not doing an interview just cause he was just, I could tell where he was at and it just didn't work out. But, it's telling to me that he's not here this week. He barely flew in, I think today. And he may have been at the final press conference. I didn't go just cause I'd already gotten the coverage I needed to get. But I think that's kind of telling, and I kind of feel scared for the guy that he's fighting. I mean, it's Jason Lahoulier, who's not a killer by any means. He's there for the
right.
He's basically rust remover, you know.
Which is rightfully so. This guy's just returned back into the ring. So, yeah, you definitely don't want to put in James Kirkland with somebody that's been active with a high record, an undefeated fighter, whereas he has the ultra confidence, you know, where, you know, we're just not going to get back James Kirkland in full form and stuff. But, hey, let's put in some fight fans that are on hold right now that want to talk boxing with us. And let's get Jason Cruz. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Good, brother. How you doing, man? All I got to tell you right now, Jason, is I got tiger blood. That's it. What's going on?
I like that, man. I'm going to start using that.
I'm going to come up with my own beer, dude. It's going to be called my boy Ernesto Gabillon, you know, for boxing scene, goes, hey, we need to come up with a beer called Winning Tiger Yale. I said, that's pretty good right there, dude.
It's pretty good. Listen, I want to say something, man. First of all, congratulations to Robert Garcia. You know, for back-to-back, fighters of his winning championships and doing great.
Absolutely.
And congratulations to Brandon Rios. Man, let me say something, man. I don't know who the pack fags are more mad at, Brandon Rios for winning in the way that he did or Robert Garcia for having success, you know? Well, I know that they're pissed off, man. They wanted Brandon Rios to lose so bad, but this kid showed, man, he's the real deal.
Yeah. I don't know why they would want him to lose that bad. I mean, you know, what is said is said. I think it's more or less kids that are on the internet that are just going to be bagging on it. They're not going to let it go. We know how the internet can be sometimes and stuff. But I think at the end of the day, you got to look at the man's accomplishments and what he's doing and how he's moving himself forward and stuff. You know, I know there's a lot of criticism when it comes around Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. But at one point, you got to stop and just say, you know what? He's just not going to do what we want us to want. He's not going to do what we want them to do. So we just got to enjoy it and what the performances they're giving us at the time being.
Yeah, you're right. Listen, the Barrera fight, I think, is a disgrace to boxing fans and to the sport as a whole. I think if you want to put him in to fight, you know, a guy with a big name that's going to sell, I think Marquez would be a good match for him. You know, that sounds credible, but we all know that, or at least I wholeheartedly believe that Marquez will be probably fighting Pacquiao next after Mosley, so I don't see that, you know, happening. So,
but that would be a good... You know, the thing
could
is
end
that...
up being part of that deal. You know, they may say, you know, right, defeat him to Rios, and then... But Bob even said he's not interested in promoting Marquez, and Marquez is still... I think there's still like a 30-day window. There's still some time left for the Golden Boy to be negotiating with Marquez. So, you know, we'll see how that all works out. You know, with Rios, though, it's interesting, all the backlash, everybody all mad about the Freddie Roach video and that, boy, this guy's terrible. And, you know, that was, I'm not condoning what he did. It's you know, it was at best a terrible joke. But there's so many things that we don't see. of these people. We think we know them because we see them in little videos here and there, or we see them and read about them in interviews, and we see them in post-fight. You know, we don't know these people. And I think it's really funny and strange that if that video didn't exist, if you take that moment away, everybody would be a Brandon Rios fan right now. There wouldn't be one person
right.
in boxing that would not like that guy. But they saw that one thing, and they're all upset about it.
Yeah, you know what? That's a lie. There are Brandon Rios fans. You know, they're closet fans. The pack darts, the pack fags, like I call them, they're Brandon Rios fans in the closet, just like they're Mayweather closet fans. I bet you if you go in their room, they're shoulder rolling in the closet, you know, trying to mimic Mayweather moves. So they're full of it. Let me say something about that, too. Freddie Roach talks a lot of shit, but he starts crying the minute somebody dishes it back to him. So, you know what? This ain't CNN. This ain't a political debate. We don't have to be politically correct. God damn it, this is boxing. So if you talk shit, hey, you're going to get shitted on. You know, it's a fight game. It, you know, this ain't a girl sport. We don't have to be politically correct. We don't have to be like, you know, it's a game, so people need to get over it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, when people go like, you know, how dare he say that? And it's like, I don't know, there's many, actually, I don't really look to anybody for my moral center. I don't look to the president. I don't look to boxers or athletes. You know, I kind of just look, you know, with the lessons that my grandfather and my father gave me. That's pretty much it. You know, and the day I look to a boxer and guys that beat each other up for a living to tell me how to live is a sad day indeed. You know, I mean, I enjoy what they do. I respect what they do. I can't do what they do. And that's it. That's the long and short of it, you know. So.
Yep, exactly, man. Well, hey, Jason, thank you really quick, brother, for calling in. I'm going to put you back on hold.
Guys,
definitely got to roll in.
Thanks for the call, man.
All right.
Like I said, we got a packed show tonight, and we definitely got some guests to be calling in. Hey, but you know, there's already been an announcement about Kelly Pavlik being on the undercard of Manny Pacquiao versus, you could say, Mosley. Kelly's trainer, Jack Lowe, made an announcement in Youngstown saying that, he's going to be getting back in the ring, and it's a possibility, not a possibility, it is confirmed he's going to be getting in with the middleweight Alfonso Lopez, who I spoke to a little earlier and is willing to come on and speak to us about this fight that's coming up for him in May. So, Gabe, I didn't have a chance to let you know that we were going to have him on here, Gabe, but I think we should call him in. I know, I'm sorry. You know, you can kill me after.
Yeah, I'll just wing it. Thanks.
I know we don't. You know what? I know a lot of people don't know about him. He is undefeated. You know, he is a middleweight, and it's a opportunity that I think he's very excited about, and definitely wants to show that he's got the goods. You know, I know Kelly Pavlik went to rehab for drinking, but it says that he's back on track and he's ready to get back into the ring and prove that he's back in full form and he's still a factor in the middleweight division. So let's get Alfonso Lopez on the line. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Alfonso.
Yes, sir.
How you doing, brother? You're on live right now with us on Leaving the Ring. I'm Dave Duenas with my co-host Gable Montoya. Hey, so you're the name they picked out of the hat, Alfonso Lopez, undefeated fighter, middleweight, to get in back with the return of Kelly Pavlik. How do you feel about that, man?
I feel pretty good. You know, I thought my opportunity would come with a chance similar to this. You know, my team always said, you know, be ready for the call. You know, it's going to come. And it's going to come, you know, may come on short notice. Fortunately for me, I got plenty of notice, and it's a big opportunity. I'm happy for it.
You know, when you got a guy that's in, you know, high profile, okay, who dismantled Jermaine Taylor in order to get a hold of all the titles, the middleweight titles, he was unified champion, and then he gets beaten by Sergio Martinez, and you know the excuse was is that he had an alcohol problem and he was just going through a lot of rough stuff in his life. Okay, he goes away, goes to rehab, and they have to find somebody that's going to be suitable for him to look good. Now, how do you feel about that? That they're more or less looking at you as an opponent to get him back into the game and in the sights of boxing fans.
Yeah, if they picked me for as somebody for him to look good against, you know, I think they chose the wrong guy. You know, I think the other two guys that they were looking for were probably were, you know, in my mind, better suited opponents for him. But you know, if he wants a tough fight and he wants to return and fight somebody who's undefeated maybe and a big super middleweight, and then they, you know, they chose the right guy, but, you know, I ain't going to stand in front of him and be his punching bag like every other small middleweight he fought did. You know, I'm coming in there to fight smart and, you know, take home a win. I'm not going to go in there just to be in the ring and share the ring with Kelly Pavlik. You know, that's not what I'm there for.
Absolutely, you know, and Kelly Pavlik is still ranked number two in the rankings in the world and stuff. Let me ask you this. What is it that you think that you're going to be able to bring and oppose over Kelly Pavlik? What do you think that you should be able to take advantage against him? Because he's a big puncher, and he's a guy that if you do stand in front of him, he's going to walk you down, and he's going to land the shots that he likes to do. He has that 1-2-3 punching combination that he favors a whole lot when he gets in the ring with somebody.
Yeah, you know, I think just, you know, well, we're the same age, but I think I'm the younger fighter of the two. You know, he's been doing it a lot longer than I have. He's a little more war-torn than I am. I think I'll have the fresher legs. I think I'll be in better condition. You know, he's used to being in condition at 160. You know, he fought heavy and put on a lot of weight with Martinez. But I don't think he's used to really carrying around that kind of weight in the ring. He was in great shape when he was a true middleweight, making weight for Jermaine and his great defenses that he had. You know, he was suited well. He was in great shape carrying around, you know, maybe 172 pounds. But when you're going to start carrying around 183, 184, 5 pounds, you know, if your heart ain't conditioned for it, you ain't going to be in the same kind of shape. So I've always fought big. You know, I'm a big super middleweight. You know, I fought light heavy for a long time. And, you know, I know I can carry the weight. And I know I'm going to be physically strong. And I think just with movement and angles and, you know, not easy to hit and not there in front of him, I'm gonna give him problems. You know, I'm not saying the fight's going to be easy for me. It's going to be one of the toughest fights that I'm going to have. But I'm up for it, and I think, you know, I probably surprised a lot of people.
Absolutely. I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel Montoya from Max Boxing.
All right. How you doing, man? Congratulations on getting such a big opportunity, man. That's great. My pleasure. I was looking at your record here as Dave was talking, and well, this is a big step up. You've done like 2 10-rounders, and you just came off back in November, a 12-round, you knocked a guy out in the 12th round, or, you know, stopped him. But this is a big step up in class for you, looking at a lot of the guys you fought. In terms of experience, I mean, have you sparred with a lot of world-class guys? I mean, give us some of your background of where you came from and why are you prepared for this moment?
I think just the team that I have behind me, you know, they have such a deep history of boxing, you know, the Harris family, you know, Roy Harris from Cut and Shoot and Henry Harris trained, you know, been a great trainer since he was young in age. They know a lot of the sons and cousins, everybody. They've just taken me in and taught me so much about the game, not just going out there and using my athleticism and, you know, and trying to box. They've taught me, you know, angles, safe spots, you know, everything that you have to learn to be a complete fighter, I've learned from them. But, you know, and you learn in the gym. You know, you have to spar tough. When I was in the amateurs coming up, I moved to the amateurs real quick because I wasn't sparring with other amateurs. I was sparring with Felix Cora Jr. out of Galveston. I was sparring with Chris Henry. You know, I was sparring with guys who were making me work, who were making me pick up the game really quick. And that's what works for me the best. But, sparring-wise, I've been in the last 3 training camps that I've had. I was in the gym with Marcus Too Much Johnson, you know, out of Houston. I was training for, you know, a couple of years there. I was always in the gym with Chris Henry. You know, I was Cornelius White, obviously Felix Cora, I mentioned earlier. But, it's just, you know, I've been there. I even sparred some with Sugar Shane Mosley. But, you know, it's I've been in the gym with lots of guys that are bigger than me, stronger than me, you know, been doing it a lot longer than me, and I've done great. And I think that's what got me to this point in my career, and I think that's what it's going to, you know, help me to get through this fight.
Take me back to that back to November. You know, you had your first 12-round fight, and not only that, but you went almost all the way to the end of the fight and then won by stoppage with, like, 15 seconds left to go. What was that experience like?
That was a good experience. You know, we took the fight. We had a lot of time to prepare. We fought Romero Johnson, who was just a real tough guy. Jed beat up some light heavyweight and was could make 68. You know, and it was a good fight for me, having made 68 in a while, to come down and make and fight a 12 rounder and see how I felt and what kind of condition I had late in the fight. You know, squeezing down to 68. But the fight went well. You know, the venue and the setup wasn't the greatest. You know, we kind of got rushed in the ring. There wasn't really dressing rooms to warm up in. It was kind of get dressed here, all y'all here in this room together, get taped up, get gloved up, and, we started in 5 minutes. You know, then it was kind of one of those, so we, everybody kind of got in the gym cold and, not in the greatest moods. And, so it was awkward. It was a private show that they do there in Dallas, and, so I got in the ring. I had to kind of use the first couple rounds to warm up. And the guy that I was fighting, that Romero Johnson, he was, I should have took notice of what he was doing, because he was like in a sweatsuit and jumpsuit. And he was jumping around, and he was like, he was all warmed up. And I was like, sitting down in the chair looking for a restroom. We got taped up, got in the ring, and, we fought hard for 12 rounds. I thought I'd broke my hand in round five. It ended up, not being broken. I just had a deep, ruined some tendons in my right hand. But I made it through the fight. I kind of went to one hand from like round 7 to 12. But when I kind of hurt him in round 10, 11, he was really starting to fade from the body punches. And just, the movement was wearing him out, and I had to make him use his legs and caught him up on the ropes and just let them punches go. And I was really catching him playing, and the referee jumped in and stopped it.
Do you feel that Kelly Pavlik, because he campaigned in his career as a middleweight. Now he's deciding to move up, and he's got 168. And when he did move up, this is a while back with Bernard Hopkins, I believe it was at a catchweight at 170, he looked really sluggish, really slow. Do you think that at 168 would be a weight that you're going to see the old of him, or do you think that he's a little bit over his head and getting in? Because you're a pretty big puncher yourself here, Afonso. I mean, you got 16 KOs under your belt and 21 wins.
Yeah, I consider myself, a one-shot knockout guy. I've always been more of the boxing type, the mover, but, most of the guys that the guys I mentioned that I spar with, they're always like, they always will tell me, God, you're hitting hard, I never felt like I was a big puncher, but I have knocked out some guys. But I think it always comes the way home runs come, when you're not really trying. You're just kind of going out there, you're going with the flow, you're in the rhythm, and bam, you knock somebody out. That's how it's always come for me. I've never jumped out there and slugged out with somebody and just waited to knock them out. It's kind of just come for me. But, turned out good that way. But I think, Kelly, the Kelly Pavlik I'm expecting is, we all know he's been out of the ring. He's had his problems. I think he's straightened out. I think he's going to, I think he's relaxed and rested, and maybe he's put on some pretty good weight. And, supposedly we're supposed to fight at 6-8. I haven't got the contract, but I know, the word was that we agreed on was 168. So, I think I expect the old Kelly Pavlik, maybe making weight a little more comfortable, not having to kill himself for the last 10 to 15, 12 pounds. But I just don't know if he's going to, I don't know. I'm going to expect, the Kelly Pavlik we saw, beat Jermaine Taylor and do his, every title defense that he had until he ran into Hopkins, and he was just kind of not big enough to, deal with Hopkins' craftiness, and then, pulling some weight for Sergio Martinez. I thought he looked great, in the middle rounds, and then he came off for 9 and, got busted up and cut a little bit, and it looked like he just slammed into a wall and couldn't recover. But, I think he'll do fine at the super middleweight. I think he's gonna come on strong.
Well, let me ask you this, because you said that you've been told it's supposed to be at 168, but you're not really sure because it's not cemented down, it hasn't been stamped. You know, and yep. seeing that this guy is considered the star coming in, and there's a possibility you've been campaigning, you know, all the way up to, you know, I mean, 180, I'm looking at it here. I yep. mean, you know, you're a guy that's been campaigning as a big guy. He's a guy that's been campaigning as a big middleweight, you know, still yep. considered a big guy, but still a middleweight. Now,
yep.
if it came into play where they said, you know what, we don't want to fight at 168. We want to fight at maybe 164. That's a 4-pound difference there. Do you feel
yeah.
that, okay, are you a little wary about that, man? Does that worry you guys a little bit? Because it looks like if they would do that to you, it'd be more or less they're weighing it so that there's a possibility you don't have the win.
Yeah, no. If that happens, I honestly could tell you I come nowhere near 164 pounds. You know, I hope that they come and say, hey, you want to do 170? You know, that's what I'm hoping for. You know, but you know, for them, if they come with 164, you know, that would be a stretch for me. I mean, that's tough. Like you said, I've been fighting big. It would be tough. I don't think I could pull 64. If I'd come nowhere near, you know, 60. You know, like he's a big guy. But he's a big guy who can make 160 pounds. I'm a big guy who can, you know, just make 168 barely, you know.
Right.
And, you know, that's what it comes down to. Yeah, 60. If they did 64 or something like that, it would, you know, I'd have to ask for a couple more pounds, and even that would be killer.
Right. And this is interesting here, too, Gabriel. I don't know if you noticed this, but Cut and Shoot, Texas is where you reside from. Your birthplace is Corpus
yeah.
Christi. Cut and Shoot, though, I mean, that's the kind of – I would describe your style like that. You know, you said you're a boxer puncher. You're looking to cut and shoot, you know, against Kelly Pavlik. But the other interesting thing is your nickname, the Tiger. Which,
yeah.
you know, we were actually making, you know, I don't
oh,
know if
no.
you saw the Charlie Sheen interview, dude. I mean, I was all saying, hey, I'm all full of tiger blood here. And you got the nickname
yeah.
the Tiger, man.
yeah. You know, my trainer, you know, Hayden Harris, you know, when we first, you know, when I was in the amateurs and we started going after it, when you were going to turn pro, he kind of just, you know, he always loved how, you know, that he just kind of hate, you know, the whole, you know, definition of being a tiger, just, you know, aggressive and coming forward in the nonstop action was just, that's how I started my career. I was always in great shape, and I would hustle guys. I didn't have the experience, but, you know, I was right there in there pushing. I could wear guys down. But as we learned and got smarter and we worked with good fighters, you know, I've adapted and learned a lot of new things, and I'm a completely different fighter from when I started. And, it's been a huge help. You know, it's been a great deal. You know, on what I've done, but yeah, the Tiger, he gave me that, and we stuck with it. I liked it, and we've been kept it going. It's been working good for us.
Hey, sounds good, brother. Hey, man, I appreciate it, Alfonso, you taking the time to speak to us. I know it was on short notice. You know, I had hit you up, I think it was like 30 minutes before the show even started, or 45 minutes before the show
yeah.
even started, and you were a good sport about coming on leaving the ring, man. I wish you all the luck, and keep us updated, brother. Keep us updated
yeah.
about what's happening with you and stuff. And, again, thank you for coming on with us.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for, you know, thanks for having me on. You know, anytime, you know, I'm available. I'll do it anytime. I appreciate you guys.
Absolutely, brother.
Yeah,
take
man.
Care,
good
man.
Good luck to you.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks. Bye-bye.
There you go. You know, a young fighter out of Texas, a Cut and Shoot, Texas, who's got some tiger blood. He's definitely going to need it when he gets in with Kelly Pavlik. Whatever weight they step in, you know, 168 or even 170. And, you know, like you said, anything at 164 he just can't make. I mean, you're looking at his whole career here. The guys came in at 177 or 180. It's just he's a big kid. He's a big kid. You just don't see him cutting weight at all to accommodate Kelly Pavlik from his return from the rehab, you know, and you know, it's no joke about that, you know, and the guy did have a drinking problem, and hey, you know, just wish for him to get better. Win or lose, just want to see the guy get better, you know what I mean? Even if he doesn't make he's not successful and he decides to retire after, if he loses against Alfonso Lopez, and but that's the way the hand is dealt in boxing, man. You know, it's always got to be passed down. There's you're gonna have glory, you know, definitely in the sport, but you're not gonna have it all the time.
It's gonna be interesting. Here's a kid that just came from his first 12 round fight. Obviously,
yeah.
this is why they picked him. I mean, you look at him, and there's nothing on his record that says he's chinny. he obviously can box a little bit, so he's going to give Kelly some movement, which is going to give him some rounds. But he hasn't been in with anybody. You know, although if you look at BoxRec, you know, which is, I mean, you got to start there and then dig deeper into a career. But, you know, I always say that, you know, this fighter is in the red. You know, it doesn't mean that he owes people money, but that you look at it and all the guys he's fighting are all, you know, as, you know, green on BoxRec shows wins, and red shows losses, and they show the guys last, you know, six fights on BoxRec, and most of these guys are in the red. You know, the last guy wasn't in the red. He had one loss in his last six, but that's why they got him, is inexperience. And here's a kid that just was in pretty much a broom closet, wondering where the bathroom is, and not having anywhere to warm up or get changed.
Wow.
At 5 minutes and hit the stage. He's going to be in the Mandalay Bay private dressing room, all the hoopla surrounding a Manny Pacquiao fight. I mean, and then everything surrounding Kelly Pavlik coming around. I mean, he's going, you know, from the outhouse to the penthouse. And it's going to be really interesting to see that mental challenge, how he deals with that. Not just the guy in front of him, because Kelly Pavlik is a guy, if you're in great shape and you can box a little bit, have a good chin, you can formulate a game plan to beat him. The blueprint is there. But how do you deal with all the other stuff and that big moment? That'll be interesting.
Yeah, that big moment of when the lights are shining on you and the buzz, which is going to be a big buzz, you know, even though a lot of people are going to attend or tune in and watch Manny Pacquiao and Sugar Shane Mosley, you're going to have your regular, you know, fight fanatics that are going to be sitting there going, I wonder how Kelly Pavlik is going to look. Let's see if the ghost is back or he's been ghosted out. And, you know, Alfonso the Tiger Lopez here is definitely a guy that can really shine off of that night, or he can really shell up and not show up for the fight and just ends up being that opponent that the Kelly Pavlik people are hoping that he's going to be, you know. Hey, really quick, I want to make a shout-out to the winners that won the tickets to Indio, California, the Fantasy Springs Casino for Solo Boxeo that's happening tomorrow night. You know, Roberto Salazar and Delia are both heading out there. Enjoy your guys' self. Please don't drink and drive. And if you do, don't mention my name or Gabriel Montoya's name and stuff, you know, because we ain't your friends, homeboy. We're not going to answer. We're not going to bail you out. But enjoy yourself there. And, you know, have a good time, man. You know, we try to give back to our listeners as much as we can. You know, it's if we can keep doing it all the time, trust me, we will try and stuff, but it's just one of those things that if we get a hold of tickets, we would definitely give them out. Now, we could talk about some fights here. You know, we got a lot of good upcoming fights are going to be happening this Saturday night, or we could continue recapping what's been happening on the past week. Now, the thing, too, that I wanted to bring up here really, really quick and stuff is that this is kind of a little bit of a buzz here in the boxing world. I don't know if I'm among the fight fans and stuff, but really with among the fight community and stuff, you know, Fred Steinberg being released with his contract with Gary Shaw after the Nebraska event, which was Antonio DeMarco's comeback. He gets in the ring, and Nebraska had over 6,000 fans that showed up. And what happened there? A lot of people are asking and stuff. The Heartland Event Center did hold a great event. It was normally an arena or a pavilion, you can call it, and stuff that would hold concerts and other things, you know, in other sports and stuff, not a boxing sport. But it just showed you that not Vegas is not the only spot they're going to have, you know, a good sizable amount of fight fans. When really, honestly, the amount of size of fight fans that have been showing up to Vegas have been skidding down a whole lot every year. It's been, you know, shallowing down pretty much. I mean, I think at one point the pond is going to be dry. But it does show you that there's other parts of the United States that still appreciate the sport of boxing. Nebraska, who ever thought of that? You know, 6,000 fans came out, and I got to tell you, it wasn't the greatest fight in the world. You know, DeMarco was definitely having a lot of problems and stuff. You know, the guy was quirky, really awkward. They hit. He had good head movement and stuff. But the Nebraska fans definitely made it fun to watch, and they definitely showed their appreciation.
Yeah, I mean, who knew there were 6,000 boxing fans in Nebraska? You know, I guess, you know, Gary Shaw got lucky on that one, but it looked like the environment was great, and that was a funky fight. I think people it really jumped down DeMarco's throat. You know, oh, he's the new Rocky Juarez. He just doesn't let his hands go, and just saying, you know, he's been ruined by Valero. The guy had fought, you know, he fought like what, one time since Valero, and that was last July. You know, he was rusty, in my opinion, just finding himself again after a knockout loss. It takes time to kind of get your confidence back. And if you're really looking to put a guy in to get his confidence back, Reyes Sanchez isn't that guy. He's lanky. He's tall for the weight. He's got long arms. He's got weird technique. You know, it's not traditional technique by any means. And yet the guy's in incredible shape. He wasn't breathing hard at all down the stretch.
Absolutely, yep.
And yet he just threw a ton of punches. You know, Jim Lampley would be going crazy, wetting himself about the CompuBox if it was on HBO. You know, thankfully there were cooler heads over at Showtime. But there was a guy that just kind of kept coming downhill. And I'd watched a bunch of tape of him coming in, and I didn't think he would win. I thought, you know, DeMarco's more of a higher class of fighter. He's got better techniques, greater punches, which is really what won him this fight. But he was going to be a problem because he looks kind of easy to beat, and he's kind of there to be hit. But he's like quicksand. You could throw a bunch of punches, you're moving around a lot, you're getting all these things done, and then you realize, like, I'm dead tired, and this guy isn't, and he's still here. He's got a good chin. So it was just a funky style matchup. And I think that there's more for Antonio DeMarco down the road. He's a young guy. He had a loss. I just don't believe in that idea that a guy loses and he gets knocked out, that you just throw him on the scrap heap and he's done.
Absolutely.
I think that fighters can learn. I mean, I was talking to Ponce de Leon, one of the members of his team, Dub Humley, who's 71 years old, been in this game for years, you know, I mean, just years and years, and long before I ever came to this planet. And his thing is that you can always learn. You can always be taught. If you're willing to learn, you can always be taught, and flaws can be made up for. And look at Ponce de Leon. He got iced in one round by Juanma Lopez. He's on a 7-fight winning streak. He's had some pretty good wins. Antonio Escalante was a knockout of the year candidate, you know, just last year. And here he is in a big fight against Adrian Broner. You can come back and you can retool and you can alter your technique. And it takes time sometimes to come back after a knockout loss and figure yourself out all over again. I have no problem with that. So I think people were being really harsh on that criticism. I didn't think it was the most scintillating fight on the planet, but, you know, I also didn't want to throw the guy under the bus either. You know,
right.
It's a learning process.
You know, there's a thing, too, that is really funny about it. You know, when people are saying, like, oh, you know, he's not letting his hands go. He looks terrible. First off, Reyes Sanchez was just, I mean, you got to admit here, the guy was coming forward. He took a good shot, and he was right there in your chest. You know, he really didn't allow DeMarco to be long and ragey where he was successful at. I mean, that second round, when he let that left hand go, man, I mean, the whole event center heard it. It was a big bang and stuff. But a lot of folks are forgetting that. His last fight with Daniel, he knocked him out in the second round in Aguascalientes. Before that, you know, with the late Edwin Valero, he was KO'd in the ninth round, but he fought his heart off for that fight. And then prior to that, he had knocked out two other guys, you know. So the guy has been active, and he does let his hands go. But you're going to have one of those guys that are just so awkward that the timing, when your timing is in there, you're fighting somebody that's just stationary and a guy that is, you know, more traditional, your timing is good. But when you get a guy that's really quirky and he's kind of have like a rubber band body, because that's what he had and stuff, and maybe the hair kind of distracted him, you know, I don't know. But that there has to take a lot of play there in how DeMarco looked in performance-wise. I think eventually when he realized, I hit him with some pretty big shots, this guy is not going to let out. And I think DeMarco, too, in some ways, might have said, you know what, I want to gather some rounds, but also I don't want to gas myself out, because you got to look at it, too. He has not been that active, you know, and that also has to come into play of how his performance was. He has not been active. He hasn't been, you know, the most guy that's been back in that ring. He's rebuilding himself back up, and I think that's what his team is doing. And picking Reyes Sanchez, I think they were hoping that DeMarco was going to look sensational, but instead he just ended up looking ordinary.
Yeah, I mean, what do you do with that guy? You know, he's got a crazy-ass mohawk. He's coming forward, throwing a million punches. It's all awkward, you know. And you're you know, DeMarco was aggressive in the past, but I think, you know, he learned some things in that Valero loss, and he's probably assimilating them. I think he moved a lot, a little bit too much, and there was moments where he didn't really take advantage of what was in front of him. But he could have really lived behind his jab a lot more and made Sanchez pay as he was coming in a lot more. It's not like the guy was hard to hit, but he was throwing a lot of awkward punches, and sometimes you get caught with one of those in an awkward spot on your head, and things go wrong. So maybe there is some sort of trepidation there in his game now, you know, that he's kind of waiting a little bit too much or thinking a little bit too much because of what happened with Valero. But, you know, give him some time to work it out. I mean, here's another lesson learned, is when you got a volume guy, you have to come inside on him a little bit more. Rather than back up, and sit on the ropes and let him start to dominate you and wait for him to get tired, sometimes you got to, especially when a guy is wide like that with his punches, you got to shoot that line. You got to take over the line and come inside and beat him to the punch. Rather than wait to counter, you kind of, you know, it's a stink punch. You just go and just cut him off with the pass. And maybe that's how you get a knockout out of it, you know. But that's a lesson learned. And I think too often people, we're just so critical of each fight, you know, and you kind of have to look at it in a grander scheme and where the guy is in his career. He's rebuilding. It's like this weekend with, you know, James Kirkland and Danny Jacobs. They're rebuilding. Now, I don't think either one of them, I don't think James cares who's in the other corner. He's going to destroy them. But, you know, I know Danny, speaking with him, interviewing him this week, he wasn't that crazy about his opponent. You know, he was like, I really wish it was somebody that was tougher, you know, because I want to try out my new tools with Freddie Roach. I want to do some new things. But it's all part of a process, you know.
Well, we got a good fight with Zab Judah. Super Zab Judah is going to be going in with Kaiser Mambuza in New York at the AmeriHealth Pavilion, New Jersey. Now, I got it. I've got tons of emails here on leavingtheRing@gmail.com, and a lot of fans are like, you know what? Don't know a whole lot about Mambuza. What do you think? And then when the picture came out, you know, of these two guys standing in front of each other, I don't think a lot of fight fans understood how big Mambuza is. You know, Kaiser is a big guy, and in all honesty, I think that it's a really bad pick for Zab Judah. I mean, it's a good pick in terms of getting his name out there, and if he gets his win, he's definitely in lineup to you know, possibly get in with Amir Khan or somebody like that. But this is a really 50-50 chance for him, Gabe. I don't know what you're thinking and stuff, but I'm really kind of finding it hard for him to really take Mambuza in this fight here.
I went with Zab. I went one last time with him, and Mambuza is a big man. I mean, it's going to be very hard for Zab to pull this out. He's, you know, but he's a guy that looks for. Maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid one last time, and I kind of think that I might be.
Yeah.
But I was never the biggest Zab guy in the world. I wasn't like Max Kellerman calling him the next VP Whitaker. But then he added Whitaker to his corner.
Right.
And you know, in a sense, maybe these are two guys that are looking for something that they once had. You know, I think Whitaker for a long time was that guy that he would lose a fight and towards the end of the career and say, well, he still didn't beat me. Nobody ever beat me. I think Trinidad was the only guy that he really gave credit to actually beating him. And in this, maybe you got two dreamers, in a sense, that are in the same corner that are hoping that things go right one last time. And I tend to believe a little bit that maybe, you know, Zab's the kind of guy that needs an extra little bit of fuel. Like he's kind of ADD-ish, you know, and he needs something to kind of boost him each time. And we've seen a progression with him in the last couple of fights, and that he's staying in condition more. You're not hearing about him getting into trouble anymore. He's matured a bit, you know, and understands, I think, that the clock is ticking big time. I think maybe with the home canvas advantage at the Prudential Center, I think he can box and move a little bit better than he did in his last fight against Matisse and pull out a decision.
Unless
he eats something big, you know?
You know, you raised a really good point here, is that you have two guys that Zab Judah and Pernell Whitaker, Sweepy, which to me is one of the best defense whizzes of our time, okay? This guy here was just phenomenal. He was great to watch. You know, he could really literally make you miss the 6 to 8 punch combination and be in front of you. And I used to love when he would swirl around you and then tap you in the ass to basically let you know I'm over here. It was almost cartoonish when he did that. The thing, though, is the trouble in the ring is with Pernell Whitaker. You know, he had a cocaine problem, and Zab definitely showed the immaturity in the ring. They put both these guys in there. You have basically two guys that have been struggling with themselves outside of the ring, you know, where Pernell was more focused and where Zab lacked that. What does Pernell Whitaker bring? Does he bring more does he bring a little bit more stableness in terms of being focused, saying, hey, listen, be focused, be ready, but you can still screw up out of the ring. You know, Zab talking about going to the Def Comedy Jam after the fight with Mambuza, you know, and taking Pernell Whitaker, it still tells you that he still has a little bit of fire in him, even though he's, what, 32, 33 years old. And with Pernell, I'm just wondering, you can definitely learn a lot. You can definitely learn a lot from him. But the time frame is what really questions everything, and the maturity level. I mean, you know, it's that one saying, you know, you can't father a son when you're trying to be his a friend.
Yeah, I mean, that could also be him talking. You know, I mean, who knows what Pernell is thinking when he's talking like that? I mean, Pernell seemed to think that, you know, I think, you know, the feeling I got from him was that he was the teacher, and he's kind of unlocking things. And bringing things back out for Zab. You know, we'll see. You know, and I wonder, too. I mean, he's not exactly – he's a proven fighter, obviously. He's a Hall of Fame fighter,
right,
in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
But is he a proven trainer? I mean, not everybody – you know, Jordan showed that he's not exactly, you know, a great GM, even though he was a great player. You know, Magic Johnson is probably a better analogy of becoming a coach, and he wasn't very good, you know. Sometimes it doesn't translate, you know, just because you're a natural talent like Pernell was, and arguably like top two greatest defensive fighters of all time. He may not be able to teach somebody else that, certainly not at 32. We'll see. You know, I think it's a really interesting fight. I will not be surprised if Kaiser Mabuza takes out Zab Judah, lands something hard, hurts him. I mean, you know, Matisse was able to hurt him. He's been, you know, knocked out before. It's not impossible. I think it's almost kind of a 60-40 fight in a sense, or 55-45, and not in Zab's favor, other than he's at home at the Prudential Center.
But, you know,
we'll see.
Right, and Matisse's definitely showed that you can still hurt him and still rock him, and he definitely showed that you still gas him out if you continue putting the pressure on him. And two, that Mambuza, hopefully his camp was looking back on tape stuff, even though Zab was really successful before getting stopped because of a cut. He had a lot of success with Kalati, but you can still see if you're a much bigger man than him, he does have problems with you, you know, because he has to spend more energy than he normally likes to do. You know, this is a guy that uses a lot of speed, but at the same time, with that speed, he ends up spending energy. And when he ends up spending energy, he tends to be a little bit more vulnerable to hit and stuff. I got Mambuza winning on the late rounds and possibly KOing him on 11th or 12th round and stuff, you know. See that. Huh?
That's a good pick, you know.
I
mean, he made Kendall Holt look small. You know, and
right.
Kendall Holt's not that small of a guy, you know, in terms of the 140 pounders. He probably passed it, you know, but he does some things wrong, though. And
right.
I'm curious if Pernell has tightened up Zab's game. I've never been a fan of his uppercut. I think he kills his power with his uppercut. It comes away from his body, and his power, like, you know, he dips down, right? And then it starts off with that fist on his chin. I'm trying to, like, describe this on the radio.
Right.
When he goes to throw it, as he's dipping down to throw that uppercut, the hand moves back away from his jaw and backwards, and then it comes forward like a pendulum. You lose
right.
power that way, as opposed to just coming down and it comes straight up off the chin, maximum power, maximum torque, knockout. You know, he kind of wallops with it. That's a problem. And I wonder if you know, sometimes it's little things that you tighten up with a guy that affect huge changes. And you watch Mabuza. And when he throws his right hand, really when he throws his jab, he does the bow and arrow, You know, the jab comes out and the right hand.
Jackknifes that jab. Yeah.
Yeah, it will be his right hand comes away from his chin. So he'll be in his guard and that left hand comes out and then the right hand drops. A guy like Zab is gonna pick up on that. Will he be able to do anything about it? We'll see. You know?
I think he's not
that accurate either, Mabuza. You know, that's the other thing. I don't know. I'm not crazy about his accuracy, but
well, that's the thing, too. He falls into, you know, that accuracy, it is a big problem, you know. And that's what I'm saying. That weight and that size can make a difference because he could fall into Zab, where Zab has to now use his legs a little bit more to get him off of him or, you know, kind of circle him, you know. And that there, too, would be in the play for Mambuza, where making him work a little bit more than what he needs to rather than sitting on his punches. And, you're absolutely right about that uppercut, you know, Pernell. If he caught on to that, the only problem is Pernell's never been a big puncher. He's never been a guy that liked to commit. He didn't like to commit because if you commit it, you got hit. So I wouldn't think that he would correct the punch that Zab does. I think he was more or less there to help Zab be more elusive, you know. And that's where I'm saying, you know what? I don't know how elusive you're going to get him right now in his stage of his career, being a 32. You know, I think he needed somebody a little,
33.
Or 33, right? And I think they needed a trainer right now that was going to go in and really correct those punches that you're talking about that can be very effective against a guy like Mambuza. So
yeah, we'll
I got
see,
my pick
you know,
for Mambuza.
I'm taking that by very close decision again. You know,
well, it's on.
Yeah, we're going to see, you know, because I picked wrong last week. I'll probably be picking again wrong here. It's one of those ones where I'm just like, I made the pick on TNR and I'm kind of sticking with it. And, you know, on the next round, and the more, as the week goes on, the more I kind of don't like my pick. But, you know, we'll see. I'm going to stick with it. I'm not going to pull a John Kerry. I'm not going to flip-flop. I'm going to stick with this one.
Well, let's bring in some fight fans really quick that want to talk about, you know, Zab Judah and Mambuza and stuff. Tony, you're on live right now and leaving the ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
How you doing, brother?
What's up, man?
I'm all right. I really wish that this fight would have got picked up by HBO in the first place as opposed to the Alvarez fight. I don't know if you guys mentioned that or not. I just called in right now on the fly. But I'm really hyped up about this fight.
Yeah, this is
a
good fight. This is a really good fight. I mean, it's one of those type of fights that you're going to see either the demise of a guy that's been very popular or the making of a guy that a lot of people have not been able to tune in and watch and stuff, you know. This is not a cakewalk here for Zab Judah at all. You know, Mambuza is a legitimate, tough, big, strong guy that does make mistakes. But he's up against a guy that may not capitalize on those mistakes.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, definitely, especially in the later rounds, because we all know how Zab can get. I actually had Lucas Matisse beating Zab by 1 point, even though I know he was, you know, he got the hometown nod. So I don't know. I really think that Zab's in for a big fight. If he does win, then I would like to see him go and try to go after Alexander for some reason. I don't know why, but that fight interests me, maybe because he stepped in the ring and called out Devin, but I don't know. I think
that's a huge fight. That's a hell of a fight for, and you put that in St. Louis, that does tickets.
Yep.
That puts asses in seats, and especially because of what Zab did in St. Louis to Corey Spinks. The fight's something of a history there. It's a natural. I think maybe they'd want to go for bigger money and go for a guy like Amir Khan, but he's going to be busy, you know, with Tim Bradley in the summer is what it's sounding like in July. So that's a great fight. I think that's a natural. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be a great stylistic matchup, but, you know, Zab's done well with another southpaw before. The Spinks fights weren't bad fights. So I would say, I agree with you, man.
Did you guys see Saddam Ali's going to be off the undercard fight?
Yeah, I saw that.
Man, that's sad. That guy's a banger. He's fun to watch, man. He really is. That's a nice little pay-per-view card, man. That really is.
Those are the kind of cards that it shows people that, you know, it shows you that sometimes pay-per-views are actually necessary. And with this kind of card, you know, it's like, look, the networks aren't really going to get behind it. I got to make my money, you know, as a promoter, and I've got to get my fighters fighting. That's what promoters do. And, yeah, it's an absolutely good card. It is a bummer to lose Ali because the guy's all action. I don't know. how well that's going to last. You know, he takes a little bit more than he should, but he's certainly a crowd pleaser, and you can't argue with that. You know,
I didn't hear who you guys picked for the fights here. Picked for the Judah Mabuza fight. Who'd you pick, Gabe?
I got Judah by a kind of a split decision, kind of almost Batiste-esque win. You know, skin of his teeth.
I got Mabuza, man. I'm going to pick him by late round stoppage. And not taking anything away from Zab at all, but I think that if you kind of watch his problems with bigger fighters, you know, where he ends up spending a little bit too much energy because he's a little bit more on his toes, and his punches are kind of get a little wild after he starts losing that energy in the ring, that he's just going to fall apart like he normally does. Pernell Whitaker is definitely a Hall of Fame fighter, but bringing him in right now may be a little too late. And, you know, he's going to be practicing with his offense rather than with his defense and stuff. And I don't think it's going to help him out with Mabuza at all.
I agree with you on that. The one thing I'd say about Whitaker is I would want to see Zab get one or two fights with Whitaker in the corner before he goes into a title fight like this.
Right.
That's my only knock on that. Plus, too, I don't know what Pernell can really give him right now. The one thing
exactly.
I do like about, and I keep hearing about how, you know, Pernell's always wanted to train, but he's never had a student that would be, you know, smart enough or have the tools necessary for him to even be wanting to get into the training bucket, and now he does. So I like hearing that. That makes me feel good, or at least confident in Zab's ability to pick up new stuff from a different perspective. And so that's the one thing I'm really interested to see, how those later rounds go into effect and how Zab's defense is going to be against Mabuza, who, you know, he can crunch if necessary. So I think it's going to be a good fight. I think either or of those picks are solid picks, as far as either Mabuza getting the nod at the end or Zab getting the, you know, the hometown nod itself. Me personally, I'm going to go with I don't even know. I haven't even made up my mind yet, but more than likely, I'll probably say a hometown nod for Zab. It'll be a repeat
hometown
of the Matisse fight. But
all right, man. We're going to definitely find out. We're definitely going to find out. You know, and I like that point that you brought up here with, you know, Pernell Whitaker, and you're absolutely right. Would have loved to see him maybe have two fights with him before getting into in with a big guy like Mabuza. But I'm very curious to see how these guys react with each other during action. You know, Zab Judah's father, Joel, was always been there and has been in the ear chirping and stuff. You know, now this is a little bit of a change. We got to see if Zab is able to follow directions and able to really kind of sit down and listen to what Pernell's got to say, and to see how well Pernell is going to be comfortable and giving out instructions when he's up in a really, it's a high profile fight here for Zab's career.
Yeah, it's going to be great, man. I'm hoping to see if I'm trying to dig through my couch cushions and make sure I can try to scrape up enough change to get this fight going on Saturday night. But with that, I want to say thanks, guys, for taking my calls. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Hey, thank you too, brother, for calling in, man. Take care.
Yep.
You know, really quick and stuff, let's patch in another fight fan before we release one of our interviews that we did have earlier here with my co-host Gabriel Montoya, who was out there, you know, putting in the work for Leaving the Ring as well as for Max Boxing. But Gabe, you know, brings in his journalism A-game all the time and stuff. But let's bring in Matt, who wants to talk about Pavlik versus Lopez. What's up, brother? What's on your mind? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring.
What's up, guys? Nothing, man. I just really want to know, like, what's the inside scoop on Kelly Pavlik? Why has everybody got him counted out as a washed-up fighter already? Like, what's going on?
We live in a microwave society where people want it now, and any little bit of failure and everybody has to throw somebody on the scrap heap. They're all obsessed with undefeated, and that is a symbol of some sort of greatness. They don't, you know, where's the Gaudis gone? You know, didn't they remember that he had, like, seven fights that he lost before he got to Mickey Ward and had some great wars? I think that's what it is, man. They're obsessed with the – and I don't want to blame Floyd, because Roy Jones was a big part of it too. These guys that they win a bunch of titles and they fight in fights that they're always favored to win, and they have their O forever. And everybody goes, they're the greatest guy in the world. You know, and Manny Pacquiao is kind of on that train right now too, fighting fights that he's heavily favored in. And everybody's obsessed with that idea. And you know, whatever happened to the guy that we liked, even though he lost, like Jerry Corey?
Or Arturo Gatti, you know?
Yeah.
You know, exactly. You know the thing too is that people play too much a little bit play with people's personal lives. You got to remember too, they're just not fighters. These not guys just go in the ring and entertain us, man. They also have a life and they have problems, you know. And Kelly Pavlik definitely had an addiction. He had some demons there, you know. Should people be bagging on him about his comeback? I think people should be rooting for him, win or lose. Like I said before, win or lose. Hopefully he gets his life back on track. That's the main concern that people should have, you know, about Kelly Pavlik, because you know, even when he was champion, he was a you know very respectable and graceful champion. He wasn't one of those kind of guys that came out and dissed people and made fun of people. You know, he wanted to fight the best. He tried, you know, got in with Bernard Hopkins, and I think that's when a lot of people started bagging on him. He was after that Bernard Hopkins fight.
Yeah, but like fight. I mean, he's still a good fighter. I mean,
oh, he definitely is. Yeah, he's definitely still dangerous. You
yeah,
know?
Like I mean, he took Taylor out. You know what I mean? But Taylor beat Hopkins. So I mean, what are we saying about this? We just want to watch good fights. Is what the bottom line is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's how I look at it. You know, he's a give and take guy. Every fight that I've ever seen him in has been really good. I don't think I've ever been bored by him.
No, I mean, even when he got in with
the most exciting thing in the world, but you know, which one?
Even when he got in with Martinez, you know, I mean, you still were in hopes like he could, if he lands one big shot, he could turn the fight around. I mean, that's what Kelly brings in. You know what I mean? That's the I think that's the dynamic of Kelly Pavlik is that he can't turn it around because he's such a big puncher and stuff, you know. And I think that's where people are forgetting and falling off about him, you know. Alfonso Lopez, though, is a guy, is a big 168-pounder guy. This is a guy that has came in at 180. So those are the things you got to kind of question is, you know, is he going to be successful fighting a guy? Because he looks so sluggish when he did come in at 170 to catch weight with Bernard Hopkins, you know. But then he can go back into this rehab thing where it might not have enough time to slim him down, you know what I mean? Or his body is just it's growing still that, you know, he can't make 160 anymore. You know, hopefully he comes back and he's back in reform. Win or lose, you know what, I'm still rooting for the kid.
Yeah, I'm happy to see him back. I mean, and we're going out there in May, so I'm happy they're putting at least a halfway decent card. So I'm just happy to see him back in the ring.
Absolutely,
yeah,
brother. Hey, man.
And this one's just a tune-up. I mean, it's obviously, I mean, the kid's very inexperienced. You know, this is one of those rust removers. And we'll find out. I mean, if this kid pulls off the upset, then, yeah, there's definitely problems in Pavlikville, you know, that he may be done as a fighter, you know.
Right.
But if not, you know, then it's going to be a slow process of coming back. Probably, you know, they'll give him a Brian Vera-like fight after this and or move him into, you know, that kind of territory, or Jesse Brinkley, those kind of guys. And then if he wins those fights, then he gets then he's back in the mix and ready to take on something a little more dangerous. Is he ever going to be fleet of foot, you know, and gliding around the ring like Ali, or shoulder rolling like Floyd, or explosive like Roy Jones? No. He's a brawler, but he's a very effective brawler who used to be middleweight champion of the world. You know, there's no reason to throw him on the scrap heap because he lost the title.
Absolutely, and he's still a big puncher. And like, if anything, a big puncher can always change it around and keep it exciting. You know, so you know, like I said, hopefully, he, you know, not just winning in the ring, he wins with his life there, man. Hey, brother, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. And real quick, not gonna take too much. Time there, but Danny Garcia, we'll be back in the ring in April.
Oh, there you go, man.
are they stepping it up to a guy in his weight class, though?
I hope so. This was last minute.
That was a bad one. You know, that was
a tune-up, they said, just to get him back in the ring, so I'm not going to take too much props on it.
Right.
I understand. I don't blame the fighter, you know, he's got to do what he has to do. It's the commissions and the promoter that I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You know, you could end up damaging your kid if he hurt somebody, you know.
Right.
Not to mention the other guy. But I really like where Danny's has gone in terms of his development. I think he's really sharpened up over the years. And he's a guy that this has got to be the year, I think. He starts to really step up and people start speaking his name on a regular basis. I think that's going to happen by at least the end of the year.
You know what? You know what's crazy is that he was on a good run in 2009, but all of a sudden it just kind of stopped. You know what I mean? It went on a halt. And which I thought was really awkward and stuff. But they were kind of showcasing them all over the place. But whatever happened, I don't know exactly what the politics about that with Danny.
Well, he lost his man. He lost Shelly, and now he signed with Al Heyman. So I don't know. Hopefully, we get a big fight.
Mm.
Oh, he'll be on HBO.
Yeah,
in about 2 months.
Be on HBO. Give it a couple of months.
That's the big difference. Well, then,
all right,
yeah,
man.
That explains it.
All right, you guys take it easy. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right, man. You take care, brother.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, I know a lot of people are waiting to see what we got in store. You know, we do have another guest that's going to be calling in that's going to be live, but we do got some audio interviews that people want to tune in and listen to. Our host here, Gabriel Montoya, had a chance to chop it up with Oscar De La Hoya and ask him a few questions, one of them being, are you coming back? And this is what Oscar had to say here on Leave It in the Ring.
You're listening to Leave It in the Ring. You're listening to Leave It in the Ring.
Been hearing the rumors that you're coming back in June.
That was a good job.
Well, you're a natural lefty, right? You got the power up front.
Grabbing the key. Long interview this morning with Dan. Reliable sources. I don't know.
No.
Not even, the door's not even wide open, not even nothing. It's locked.
You pretty much closed that chapter just mentally? Like.
Yeah. Mentally, I'm there. I'm like, that's it.
You look in fantastic shape, man.
I'm only like 167.
Really? With this fight, you know, everybody's going crazy about the belt, and you know, they're all in an uprage and all that. And,
right.
And in some sense, I mean, granted, Angulo, none of the other guys were available, and so it made sense, right?
Really, they weren't. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
I don't even know where Angulo
like,
is.
Yeah, I mean, Angulo obviously has the visa paper problem or something. Or
yeah.
I think he's in Mexico. You know, with Margarito, obviously he's fighting Cotto.
Paul Williams.
Went down the list.
Yeah.
Paul Williams, I mean, I think he's
still asleep, I'm not sure.
All right. He's fighting 160.
Yeah.
So obviously he's not available. So we went down the list, and there was this one guy from England, I think he was number 6, I'm not sure what his name is. And Matthew's a much better fighter than this guy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, they made the decision. The WBC made the decision. I mean, you know.
And people act like he's the first guy to ever fight for a vacant title. You know, isn't it really more important?
People act like if Saul is the first guy to fight for the world title against a guy who doesn't have really, a name or that people don't know. I mean, look, I fought Riddle.
Right.
Chavez fought... Was it Martinez? Salvatore Martinez?
Yeah.
Nobody knew who Martinez was
right
back then.
Right. Isn't it more important about what you do with your title once you get it?
Well, look, it's tough to get a world title. It's even tougher to keep it.
Right.
That's what I tell people. Look, he wants to go after the best. I mean, this is a big step.
Aren't you going to run into the same problem, though, when he has the belt and you look down that list and all those guys aren't available?
We have to. Look, once he has that title, everybody's going to want to wait in line to fight for that title, to fight Saul Alvarez.
That's true.
Now he's the next superstar.
Right. So, once again, just on the record, not coming back?
No.
All right, man.
Thanks,
man.
Well, there you go. On the record, he's not coming back. And, you know, he touched on some points here, Gable, about what a lot of people were kind of bagging on him, bagging about Canelo, about taking this title shot with Ricky Hanna. And he made some pretty good, you know, good points about him himself, you know, when he won his first championship belt.
Well, it's funny because he brought up the Bradall fight. And that's actually like a belt that not many people really count, in a sense. Like, oh, well... Oscar didn't really campaign at 130. He kind of jumped down to 130, fought Jimmy Bredo, got that WBO belt, and that was his first title. And then he popped right back up to junior to lightweight and began campaigning there. He makes a good point about it. It was Mario Martinez, who's the guy that Chavez Sr. got his vacant belt from. And then, you know, the rest is history with him. You know, went on to be one of the greatest fighters of all time. Now, there were some things... Some people go right, look at this and say these are softballs, you know, or that I could have gone down some other avenues. One, Oscar's incredibly elusive when I interview him. He's very funny. Obviously, he's hitting a heavy bag the whole time. And you actually edited that nicely because it was actually in two pieces. I tried to get him I was trying to get him the whole afternoon. He kept going away and going to TV cameras, and then finally I kind of cornered him, cut off the ring, unlike Felix Trinidad early on in their fight, and got him over by the heavy bag, and he started hitting this bag, and then kind of answered a question and then walked away. You know, he was doing the whole thing about the jab. Then finally he kind of came back and was like, all right, I'll start talking to you. The one thing I really disagreed with him about was that we looked down the list of the rankings, and there was one guy from England, and Hatton's better than this guy. Now, he's talking about Ryan Rhodes, who is ranked number 4 in the WBC. Now, skill-wise, whatever, we can make that argument. One guy's better than the other. I mean, you know, Rhodes is like a 34-year-old guy, kind of journeyman, has been knocked out a couple times. But he's campaigned at 154 his whole career, or the majority of his career, you know, middleweight on down to 154. He's earned that ranking. Matthew Hatton's been a welterweight this whole time. That's a bit of a problem. You know, it's obvious, and Canelo's not really a welterweight. He's been fighting at 150 and mainly at 147 as a welterweight. So he's not really a junior middle. This is just an attempt to give a guy a belt, turn him into a star, legitimize him in the John Q public's eyes as a world champion, and then kind of promote him from there. For me, though, it's more important what he does afterwards. Because look at what Chavez did afterwards. Look at what Sergio Martinez did afterwards after he was awarded a vacant belt. They eventually got stripped from him. But he has defined himself as a champion by who he's faced after that. And that, to me, is more important. Good fights. The belts don't mean much to me anymore. It's a matter of, you know, they're fleeting anyways. Look at Martinez. He becomes a middleweight champion of the world, and then they strip his belt away, you know, because right. of some bullshit rule. So what does it really mean? All I know is at 160, Sergio Martinez is a very dangerous guy and arguably the most dangerous guy, and he won the linear title. That's all that really matters to me. Canelo is going to be a title holder, and he can choose to either be Sergio Martinez in the way he approaches or Bernard Hopkins type, or he can be Andre Berto and fight 10 times on HBO, defend his belt 4 times against less than great opposition, and not have the kind of respect that a champion deserves and not bring any sort of honor to that belt. It's his choice and it's Golden Boy's choice what kind of champion he becomes.
Definitely, you know, and the thing too is that, like, I like what you said, it's what you do with the bout after. When you get the bout and you're the champion of that super, of that alphabet belt. The thing too is that, you know, to me, a lot of folks have asked me, like, you know, what do you think this does for, you know, Saul Alvarez Canelo? Do you think that it's going to make him more popular? Is it going to take him to another level? I said, it definitely can take to another level when it comes to American soil, but he's a very popular guy. It is as it is in Mexico. You know, there's two really main channels in Mexico, and he's all over those channels. Okay. But the thing too, is that this is a way really honestly where he can be exposed, you know, him receiving the title. Does he continue defending it with really tough oppositions, or does he just milk it, you know, and that could damage in a lot of ways his name. We've seen it with Julio Cesar Chavez, you know, Junior. It's been damaging to his name and how he's kind of fleed away from real tough oppositions. But then when you go Saul, if he gets the title, there are some tough names at 154 that he can defend it against. And then that's where I say he can be a little exposed, because to me, it's a little premature for him to get a title right now. Even though his record may say something different, you got to remember, this is only a 20-year-old kid, I believe. You know, and you want to keep the freckles on the kid's face a little longer, you know, putting him in with some tough grown men. This guy is 20 years old, you know, and doesn't pack that hellacious punch that can turn a fight around. You know, we've seen him have problems with smaller guys where he does land good combinations. He's very precise in his punches. But if you get a big guy, you know, that's going to be able to take a punch and deliver a 154 to 160 pound punch, it's going to definitely show, and it's going to definitely make him crumble. That's the thing that kind of makes me go, hmm.
Yeah, he's certainly not ready. He's not ready for the kind of title shot where he'd have to take it from a champion. So why is he fighting for a title? You know, obviously it's just boxing politics as usual. Because,
right.
you know, he's not – it's the same thing when Berto got his title. I didn't think he was ready to take it from someone. Certainly wasn't ready to take it from Floyd. but they passed the baton because they're both Al Heyman fighters, and you know, Floyd kind of went into semi-retirement and vacated that WBC belt. Berto quickly fought for it against Mikey Rodriguez. The guy, the most impressive thing about him was his haircut didn't change no matter how many times he got hit. You know, that, and then you kind of see this kind of protected route. And I said it at the time, and I think time has bared out that it's true. Getting a belt sometimes is a way of protecting a guy. You no longer become mandatory to somebody else. So you won't get in a situation like Alexander Povetkin is in, where he's the mandatory for the title, you know, to, I think, Vladimir Klitschko, and he ain't ready for it, and he doesn't want it. And so you kind of look like an asshole. You're kind of sitting there going, well, you know, I'm in position. My people maneuvered me really well, but I'm not. I don't really want that fight right now. And I don't necessarily disagree with Povetkin that he's not ready, you know, or his team that he's not ready. He certainly doesn't look ready to me. He looks like just another victim to me, although he's a talented, talented guy. But here we have Canelo. He's going to have a belt, and he's going to be able to sit there. And, you know, if the WBC can arrange for you, or it can be arranged with the WBC to get you a belt, how do you think the mandatory situation is going to work? Think they're going to skip him anytime soon? That's kind of the problem, and that's where I'm a little worried. But, you know, screaming about it and saying this is an outrage, and of course it's an outrage. It's the WBC and it's boxing. You know, it's always kind of an outrage on some level.
I know. It's like, you know what? Did you just tune into boxing? Or have you not seen it numerous times? I mean, come on, you know. You know, it's a love and hate relationship with boxing. But if you're going to sit there and act brand new, dude, seriously, you know, I'm going to tell you now. You know, you're going to – it's going to almost be that conversation when a father sits his son down and says – there's going to be some tough times. There's going to be some moments you're not going to be able to win the girl. You know what I mean? That's what boxing is, you know. The thing, too, is that, you know, I tell you, you know, when we talk about Oscar De La Hoya here, and you're saying, you know, he's a kind of elusive guy, doesn't really want to talk to you know, guys are going to really going to dig down into – trying to find out exactly where he's going with a particular fighter or even his promotional company, you kind of tend to see kind of weary away from you to go to bigger cameras because he kind of already knows that these guys with bigger cameras that or with bigger networks, they're going to ask the non-political question, which is, this is such a great fight, blah, 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 when the reporter there doesn't even watch boxing. And, you know, but I congratulate you on cornering him there, punching the bag and stuff, and getting as many questions you could squeeze in. But, you know, I think a lot of fight fans, you know, and fight fans bag on us. Like right now, I'm checking our email. They're like, why didn't you guys ask this? I'm telling you, man, I've had Oscar just literally, I ask him a question, and he has literally turned around and walked away from me, you know?
especially in that, that's the thing, when people freak out. I knew when I gave you the interviews, I was like, I wasn't happy walking away. It was kind of like, and when I said, like, you know, when you hear this part at the end, he's turning away and walking into a bunch of other cameras.
Yeah.
And also, you know, this is not an insult, although it'll sound like it. If you really want to know how that company works, go talk to Richard Schaefer, who wasn't there that day. You know, go talk to Eric Gomez, who's the matchmaker, who was there that day, but was on the phone every time I came near. You know, with Oscar, you're getting kind of Don King without the machinations. You know, you're getting the guy that's going to tell you all the reasons why this is a good fight and why I should like it and why people should buy it, as opposed to, you know. But he was available, and I was curious on his take because he's a guy that started with a vacant belt. He's also a guy that never really dominated one division. You know what I mean? He fought a lot of guys, but maybe Weedle with welterweight, I wouldn't say he dominated, though. Those were tough fights, and he ended up losing twice, you know, in big fights.
Right.
So I was kind of curious on his take. I mean, they're kind of going to try to use the same model that they used with Oscar to build Canelo. But you look at the field, and this is what I find interesting about what's going to happen in the future. Look at the field of junior middleweights. You've got Angulo is right there, Paul Williams, and ideally it should be Saul Alvarez and Angulo fighting for this belt because they're ranked 1 and 2, but Angulo's MIA. But you had heard all those rumors and reported it that Golden Boy was interested in Angulo. Now, they already have Aris Larry Landa, who's at number 11 in the WBC. They got Sergio Mora as well.
they could put on, and on top of that, the fight that, and I don't think I'm overstating things unless he looks totally terrible on Saturday. I think James Kirkland would give Saul Alvarez hell and beat his ass.
I was thinking
2 years out of prison.
Same thing. I was thinking the exact same thing. But would they put him in with James Kirkland right away? I don't think so. I think that if anything, you know, Kirtland's going to go after another title, and if they get Angulo, because Angulo is having, you know, Gary Shaw's over there hooting and hollering about that it should be Angulo, but yeah, Angulo has been missing in action. You know, I mean,
That's the thing. You don't even, every time you ask Gary, hey, where's Angulo? I have no idea.
Well, don't whine
that your guy can't get a shot. If you don't know where he is, who does? Who should?
Exactly.
You are his promoter. So, and then you got Von Martirosian, who works at Top Rank, or, you know, is under the Top Rank banner. He ain't getting a shot, not right now. Kermit Sinskan's now working in conjunction with Top Rank. He ain't getting the shot.
No.
What I think might happen, and this is going to take a while to unfold, Kirkland gets back in shape, moves up the rankings, because, you know, he'll go from this fight to maybe, you know, another tune-up fight. He scheduled another one, like, I think next month, late in the month, and then get a real fight, and boom, he'll be in the top 10 in the WBC.
I wouldn't doubt if he
moves to welterweight, James can move into that position.
Right, but I wouldn't doubt it, Gabriel, that this is what's going to really come down to, is that Canelo gets the bout away from Hatton, because that's pretty much the schedule and the agenda of what's going to happen with that fight. You know, Hatton is just not a mega force in this bout here, but it'll be a possibility that you see the K-9, who's just been announced that he's getting back into the ring, and he's still ranked in the junior middleweight division. You know, Bungridge is still there, and that is a possible name, where Bungridge is a pretty big puncher, but he's so limited in his boxing skills that Canelo can really shine off of him. I just see Kirtland and anybody else that's on the banner, on the Golden Boy banner, are going to go for different titles, and it's just going to be one of those things where they build it up so much where they end up having – what it ends up being is they have to make these guys fight each other in an in-house fight.
That's very possible. I mean, it's just they're not gonna sacrifice Canelo to somebody like Kirkland.
No.
Put him in with Austin Trout right off the bat, or Aris Larrialonda is going to be a problem. This pains me to say it. I think we actually might see Canelo versus Sergio Mora before we see any of those other fights, which could be the worst fight of all time.
Yeah, definitely, man. Hey, let's patch in a writer, a friend of ours, Mark Ortega, who wants to call in and talk a little bit about Oscar De La Hoya and the Canelo versus Hatton fight. What's up, brother? You're on live right now.
Hey, how's it going, guys? How you doing?
Good, man.
Hey,
what's up,
Mark? How you doing?
Pretty good, man. One thing that bothered me last week or so is, you know, De La Hoya went on, they had this, like, mock trial on a Spanish network.
Ooh, yeah.
And it was really awesome how they did that. I was really surprised that all the parties participated. But one thing that Oscar said that really grinded my gears was he compared Canelo fighting Matthew Hatton to him giving an unknown Shane Mosley a shot at him, despite the fact that Shane Mosley had fought on HBO five or six times, had, you know, become the number one guy at 135 before moving up. I mean, that is maybe the worst comparison I've ever heard in my lifetime. And, you know, Matthew Hatton lost to a guy who was 9-48-3, and Shane Mosley was undefeated, you know, coming to fight De La Hoya. It's just, I don't know if that was a shot at Mosley, just an easy shot to take at Mosley, or what he was thinking. But do you guys think it's interesting that some of the stuff he says on Twitter or in public – that just kind of you sit there and go, wow, is that like, does he really think that? Or I don't understand what he's trying to get across with that.
You know, I think go ahead, Gabe. I'll give you my opinion.
It's like when Don King made the Kool-Aid, it tasted good. You know, when
right.
Oscar makes it, it's like he puts like salt in there instead of sugar. You know, it just doesn't. I think Bob Arum kind of said it best, that he's just not that bright a guy. You know, and I think he gets very excited, and business-wise, like, he's very smart. He's not going to be a guy that's broke at the end of his career, and he's made some great alliances as a businessman. when it comes to thinking on his feet and justifying something to you and selling you something, he's horrible.
Every time he says something, I just hear in my head, I'm in the best shape of my life.
That, Mark, if you listen to him carefully, and we were talking a little bit about this earlier, that how he really kind of avoids to really talk to boxing guys, you know, the guys that are going to really kind of call him out on some of the things that he says. You know, he's kind of weird about it. He kind of makes sure he has a particular distance, and then he has that shrug where he turns around and walks away, and he'll just kind of veer away. And he has his publicist there and his people making sure they kind of intervene in it. But, you know, the thing that it cracks me, I think some of the stuff that he says or even tweets is that he's trying to be – I think he overthinks things a little bit too much that it just comes out stupid. You know what I mean? He's just like, what the hell were you thinking, dude? Like, what were you talking about? I mean, I've seen some stuff on there, and we've tweeted him back. You know, when he said, I'm going to answer questions for 2 hours here on Twitter. Give me some questions. And everyone was asking some real questions, and he just shut down.
Yeah.
He just didn't even come back on Twitter. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, whatever the case is, hey, keep doing your thing, but eventually you're going to be called out on some of the stuff that you say.
You know, there was something
interesting. You know, just as far as that goes, every other promoter that I've dealt with personally has been more welcoming to the tough questions. And, you know, a lot of times there are things they don't want to answer, but they're not going to completely shut down the way that Oscar or even any of the top guys at Golden Boy. I mean, Richard Schaefer is the same way, in my opinion. He'll give you a sugar-coated answer when you're trying to get, you know, something a little deeper than that. But, you know, like Gabe was saying, the guys you want to talk to as far as getting the tough answers in Golden Boy is not De La Hoya, which is a shame because he's the face of the company and he's the guy that, you know, for running things, he should be the guy that should be able to answer those questions. I mean, have you ever seen an answer to why they have been unable to develop a prospect from the beginning of their career to a world champion? And the company's been around, you know, 7 or 8 years now, and they
right.
still have not really done that. All the guys that they've made their money on were already established when they took them on. And
blue chip guys are ready to break through. They kind of ruined, you know.
Exactly. And example, you know, Adrian Broner's in the co-feature for
right.
this card on Saturday. And who has he ever fought? And what public visibility has that guy really had? I mean, I've seen a lot of his fights that are, you know, off television on these pay-per-view cards. You know, you're able to get a hold of. I've seen most of them, and I still have no idea how good of a fighter Adrian Broner is. You know, you can look at his skill set, but the guys that he's been put in the ring with are not going to prepare him for a Ponce de Leon, despite this being, you know, a couple weight classes out of De Leon's, you know, regular, you know, his best weight. But that's the thing. It's like they don't have an answer for that, you know, and that's something that they should figure out
before they run more of these guys' careers
into the ground.
Right, Mark, but this is their theory because I did ask them that question. I did have a chance to talk to Eric Gomez, and it was on camera, and we put it up on the YouTube channel that we do have and stuff. I did ask them about that, you know, and how they've ruined prospects, and their logic is that eventually you just got to let them go. You know, you just got to see what they're all about and let them fight it out and see where they're at. You know, which, you know, I think going back with Richard Schaefer, what you were saying, you know, he can't give you – it's more kind of coded and stuff. I think we got to remember, though, is Richard Schaefer's not really a boxing guy. He's more of a numbers guy, you know, and I think that's why his answers are a little bit more, you know – like, you're just like, that's not what I was looking for. I wasn't looking for that, you know? And with Oscar...
They're all kind of politicians, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And with Oscar, I think that he knows the game when sometimes we got to remember, just because they're fighters doesn't really necessarily mean that they know what's going around them and stuff, you know? And he is the face of his company, but I've always questioned, how active is he with the company?
I think they have two. I think, too, it's to jump to the Broner thing, I think it goes deeper because he's promoted by two different people. He's advised by Al Haymon.
Right.
But Andrew Williams actually has developed Adrian Broner as a draw in Cincinnati. That's where he's hails from, and that's where he's fought the majority of his career, and he does very well over there. So in a sense, this is a co-promotion with this particular fighter. You know, they've taken a guy that he's got a fan base, and now they're putting him in L.A. on this big card to kind of introduce him to people. And I think they just feel that Ponce is an older dude. He's an established name, and they're getting him out of his weight class. But he's not that old. He's 30. He could be kind of still near his peak. And he's also fighting better than he ever has in terms of his technique and everything. I think it's a really dangerous fight, and you're absolutely right, Mark. We don't know. I've seen the skill set. I'm very impressed. But there's a lot of mistakes that Broner makes, too. I know he loves to fight and everything, and he might be a little bit tougher than we already know, but I worry about him. And in talking with Dubba Hudley, you know, it was like he was pointing out mistakes, and I was like, yeah, I saw that on tape. I saw that on tape. That's a problem. When I talked to Broner, and I asked him, and I couldn't tell if he was joking or not, but I said, have you watched a lot of tape of De Leon, you know, breaking down for him? What do you see? And he said, I tried to, but he bored me. And so I was like,
Well, you're going to bore you if he lands one of those big shots. You're going to be like, yeah, he did bore me. You know, bore me to sleep because he hit me and stuff. Hey, Mark, man, hey, thanks for calling in, brother. It's always fun. And I'll see you at the fights, man. I don't know which ones you're going to be going out to. I don't even know which ones I'm going to be going out to, you know?
Yeah, it was nice to get a little break after, like, three straight weeks of crappy headlining Tedla Futura cards in the Bay Area. You know, I got to see Peter Quillen, Dennis Sharp. You know, that was the highlight of my month. So,
wow. Are you coming down for this one? Are you covering this one?
No. I was actually thinking about coming down for Otis Griffin, Yusef Mack on Friday, but I'm still thinking about making that a last minute thing. But I wasn't planning on covering the Canelo card.
Ah, well, make sure you have many clouds of smoke, buddy, when you're going down again.
Before you go, isn't this card kind of like the Super Bowl of those cards that we've seen the last 3 weeks? Names against guys, you know, it's like big, really big names, or you know, stars in training, as I call them, versus guys that are all pretty much set to lose, except for Broner De Leon fight. I think that's a really intriguing fight, but everything else
definitely.
Is kind of just, you know, high level.
This main event
is
maybe the worst. I can't think of a worse headlining HBO bout ever. Honestly, I can't think of one than Saul Haddon. I mean, that's literally the worst that I can think of. HBO card.
John Ruiz? Or he was more on Showtime. Yeah.
He fought on, like, a lot of his fights were HBO pay-per-view. When those indie pay-per-views,
right.
They had
independent ones,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Like when he fought Galata and he fought Akendo, like those are bad fights, but at least they were like,
that's the
at least
worst
Ruiz wasn't
seen.
Expected to just blow through those guys, you know? Like
you know,
a lot, he was an underdog in most of those fights. They were just ass fights to watch.
You know what, man? The one thing I hate about talking with Mark, man, and I got to throw him under the bus on this one here, is that he always ends up making me think about particular moments. I'm like, now I'm thinking, which one, what card was more terrible than this one here? So now for the rest of the show, Mark, thank you very much. I'm going to be drifting away, daydreaming, thinking about which one was worse than the Haddon Alvarez.
To me, Ruiz Okendo, that fight was so bad that at the first hint of trouble, the ref, I thought, was so bored that he just stopped the fight. He was like, look,
totally.
A clean punch landed. Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
What's funny is I actually like Ruiz not because of, you know, what he does in the ring, because he's very boring, but because of what he was able to do with such a small skill set. He may have been the least skilled guy to hold the heavyweight title, and honestly, like, as far as his resume goes, he had the best resume of anyone not Vladimir Klitschko over the last 7 or 8 years, if you look at his record.
Well, yeah, he's fought everybody.
I'll give him that. He's fought everybody, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
never took the fight.
And when he was quiet and it was Norman Stone talking all this shit and not John Ruiz, I really liked him back then. But when Ruiz started, you know, flapping his gums a little more, then I started to get tired of him. But, the Galata fight I thought was pretty fun to watch just because of the circus aspect of that. you know, Norman Stone getting thrown out in the middle of the round for calling the referee like a fuck face or something like that.
Exactly.
And then they show Norman Stone in the locker room watching the fight and like, yeah, Johnny, yeah.
Hey, you know what, Dill, too? I thought I honestly enjoyed when he got in with David Haye. I thought, you know, he was putting in work. He didn't give up, you know. He was trying to win that fight there, you know. I mean,
His fights with Valuev and Chagaev were pretty underrated as far as heavyweight fights go. I thought, you know, he really tried to give the fans a better fight later in his career, even when he barely lost both those fights to Valuev.
He took it to heart when people keep calling him Huggy Bear, you know.
Yeah.
I think
he really did.
He did. Oh, no, he did. You know, he would voice it, and he would say, you know what, I don't know why I do it. I'm going to try my hardest. You're not going to see me hug. And I think that's what really honestly got him to kind of wear and tear, you know, and he was getting hit a lot more than usual in the later stages of his career and stuff, and I think that's what kind of shut him down as well. With David Haye, when he got in with David Haye, he was trying to open up and mix it up. He wasn't trying to hug him the whole time, and I think that's what is his demise of it when his fight, when he got in.
That and the rabbit punches, didn't really help him out either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One
more thing I want to ask you guys is, don't you think the biggest difference between why Top Rank is more successful and Golden Boy is the way they build their fighters? You don't go from, I mean, Adrian Broner is going from fighting Alito Julio and John Revish to fighting Daniel Ponce León. That is such a huge gap.
The common denominator in a lot of these guys is, and this happened, I think Jacobs actually fought a higher caliber of guy. I mean, he fought E.J. Smith, who's a higher caliber of guy before, like, than John Revish before he got his title shot. But Al Haymon, you know, look at the leap Berto made in class. All of a sudden he's got a belt, and they haven't really put him in with a killer, but I mean, you know, he went from kind of prospect guys to Louis Collazo. It was kind of a big jump in class for him. And I tend to think that it's Al Haymon calling a lot of the shots with these guys. Broner recently signed with Haymon, and then immediately they get this fight, and recently began being advised, and I'm, you know, holding up my quotation fingers, by Al Haymon. And now he's got the title shot.
Did you forget for a minute we're on radio?
yeah. I'm just letting you know. If you can't tell by my inflection. I think that's the thing, is that when these things become available, Al, for whatever reason, on HBO, has the run to say, all right, I'm going to take this guy, I'm going to put him with this guy, we're going to move him up in weight, and we're going to get him, you know, closer to a title shot. And, you know, that's neither here nor there. I mean, I can't say if it's good or bad. If the kid wins, then it's good. You know, if he gets blown out and his confidence is shattered, or he gets, you know, knocked out and because he's clearly a good fighter, then it's a serious problem, you know. But sometimes you got to just fight the fight and see what's happening. But it seems to be, to me, that on Golden Boy cards, this does happen a lot, that the big difference is that Top Rank has that infrastructure. They got Brad Goodman, they got Bruce Trampler, and these guys have been doing this for years and years, and they know how to build a fighter, not just build a record,
but build
the guy. Yeah,
and they're very patient. They're very
patient. Well, you know, I like the point that you made earlier, Gabe, about how De La Hoya, you know, won a vacant belt, and the way that he was built is a lot similar to the way they build their own fighters now. Is they get guys weight classes below their regular weight that are good names, and they, you know, as opponents for these guys. You know, Ishii Smith fighting Daniel Jacobs, Ishii Smith is not a middleweight, but, you know, by any means.
Right.
So, you know, you're getting all these guys at weights that aren't their best weights, but what can they do but accept those fights because those are the only opportunities they're being offered. You know, that's a lot of the reason why, you know, any advantages these opponents have are you know, thrown out the window when you're stepping in the ring with guys two weight classes above you. And the hilarious thing is, you know, Saul Alvarez getting all butthurt about Marquez saying he isn't deserving.
Wants
to fight Marquez next.
Yeah.
When Marquez is a small 135-pounder, like, these guys are just delusional.
I think even that was...
I think it was a joke. I think that was more of a jab at him.
I actually asked him about that, and we'll have that later on in the show, that interview. And I don't know if the translator quite got it.
Don't worry, Gabe. I'll retranslate it.
Yeah, but actually, I actually had to...
I had Zyda actually translate it for me, and or Z translate it for me, and she said, I'm reading it right now. He said he was doubting my capabilities. He threw the challenge out. He said I said it with all respect because he was doubting my capabilities.
Why don't we play it and then you know recite what he had said, you know, and kind of correct what the translator was saying. How about we do that right now?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, hey Mark, brother, thank you again. I want to put you back on hold.
Yeah,
brother.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
No problem.
Yeah, man, anytime.
Okay, let's put on Canelo. Let's see what he had to say about Marquez. Let's also see what he had to say about, you know, Matthew Hatton, who's going to be fighting Saturday at the Honda Center, Civic Center. Here we go. Canelo Alvarez.
I'll be back.
This is la última ya.
How are you? Welcome back. I'm doing good, man. No problem. You're speaking English now. You're feeling pretty comfortable with it. How do you feel fighting for your first world title?
Estamos bastante bien, bastante contentos de disputar ese título mundial. Sabemos de la oportunidad y nosotros venimos aquí a ganar ese título.
Very happy, you know, very confident, and I'm coming to win the world title.
When you look at Matthew Hatton, what do you see in terms of style? Have you watched much tape of him?
Cuando lo ves a él, ¿qué cómo define su estilo? ¿Cómo
es un peleador fajador, a la hora que hay que moverse, se sabe mover, es un peleador con experiencia, sabe hacer muchas cosas, y yo creo que va a ser una gran pelea, está fuerte y es guerrero.
He's a good fighter, he knows how to deal with it, you know, he knows how to move, he's a strong fighter, and you know, like I told all the other reporters that I'm not confident, I mean, I'm not saying he's not good, I'm taking the best Matthew Hatton, because you know what's happening.
Right. Everybody, you've had a lot of, you're very, very popular, you know, both Mexico and becoming popular here, but people seem to be upset that you're getting to fight for this world title. I don't necessarily agree with that. Do you think you've kind of, you've lost some sort of momentum in that, or that people have turned against you and that now you have to have a spectacular performance in order to change their mind?
Él no está en contra de ti, pero dice que ha ganado mucha popularidad en México y ahora aquí en Estados Unidos. Pero te quiere hacer la pregunta la misma de que dice que la gente dice que por qué vas a pelear por el título mundial.
Yo creo que la gente se dará cuenta por qué va a pelear el título mundial el próximo 5 de marzo. Le gusta demostrar con hechos y se lo va a demostrar con los hechos. Porque ustedes saben que las palabras sobran y los hechos son la realidad.
You know, I'm going to prove with myself, with the way I'm going to fight, that I deserve the opportunity. You know, I don't know what they can say, but you know, the words, you can talk too much, but you have to show it with the fist. And I'm going to do that on Saturday night.
Were you serious about calling out Marquez?
Pues yo lo dije con todo respeto porque él dudaba de mis capacidades y lo duda, pues que lo compruebe por él mismo, ¿no? Con todo respeto, yo sé que es un gran campeón mundial y que ha demostrado mucho, pero yo lo dije en su momento porque si no cree de mis capacidades, pues yo estoy dispuesto a que lo compruebe.
I said it because he is like he don't recognize me, he don't know my condition, you know, and I'm still sustaining that, you know, I'm a fighter. And if he wants to exchange with me, I'm available, you know. I said it the first time because I was right what I was saying. I believe in myself. He's a great champion.
Right.
However, I can fight. You know? If the fight happens, it happens.
Last question.
No,
you're fighting for a vacant belt. Is it less important how you got it than what you do with it once you have it?
Finalmente, vas a pelear por un título vacante. ¿Qué es lo que va a pasar con este título? O sea, antes no lo tenías, probablemente ya lo vas a tener.
Sí, si lo tengo, pues obviamente sabemos de la responsabilidad de tener un título mundial, de lo grande que es un título mundial, y pues vamos a estar muy contentos, ¿no?, de tener un título mundial para México y para nosotros.
If I win, am I expecting? It's going to be a big thing for me. It's going to be a big thing for me. Not just for me, for Mexico, and for all the people who call
me.
Well, there you go. You know, he talks about Marquez and he talks about Hatton here. And, you know, that the interview had stopped right there. I did try to find out, see if there was a little bit more to it and stuff. But go ahead, Gabriel, and tell me, man, what you think and stuff. I mean, you know, he's definitely, I think that, you know, he's still a young kid. And I think what happened with him is that he did allow, you know, Marquez kind of get underneath the skin when, you know, Marquez was, you know, asking some really serious questions about him. You know, him, is he deserving right now to get a 154 title? I mean, Marquez is basically saying the exact same thing a lot of us are saying. And you know, Canelo, being a young guy, still hot-blooded, you know, and a fighter, you know, I think he just rebutted by saying, hey, you know what, you want to question me? Let's get in the ring.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, interviews are with that, you know, because my Spanish isn't the greatest, I'm at the mercy of the interpreter, and Ramiro Gonzalez does a hell of a job. But, you know, I just kind of wonder if they change things sometimes, you know. That,
right.
I actually don't wonder it. I know it. I just wonder why they do it. And particularly with that last question, the interpreter said, I was actually given a translation of what he said. Finally, you're going to fight for a vacant title. What is going to happen with that title? That is, you didn't have it before. Probably you're going to have it already, which makes absolutely no sense. That was not my question. And Alvarez answered, yes, if I have it, probably we know about the responsibilities of having a world title, how big a world title is, and so we will be very happy to have a world title for Mexico and for us, which doesn't make a lot of sense either. It was kind of interesting. It's like you get an interview and then they kind of tell you things that you know, actually weren't said. But the Marquez question, which I thought was interesting, his answer to that, and they actually did, because I kept it short, they translated it right. He said, well, I said it with all respect, meaning him calling out Marquez, because he was doubting my capabilities, and he doubts them. So he can verify it for himself, with all respect. I know he's a great world champion, and he's proved a lot. I said that at the moment, because if he doesn't believe my capabilities, I'm willing to have him check. Hey, he's a fighter. Another guy's talking shit. You know, what are you going to do? You know, you don't think I'm worthy? Why don't you come on over and find out? And we all think, oh, God, you know, he's a lightweight. And it is bad. I wouldn't want to see that fight any more than I wanted to see Marquez fight Floyd. He's not a welterweight. But
right.
I think it was just fighter pride. And, you know, people just go nuts with any little angler they can instead of thinking for themselves. And this thing was staged on TV so we could all watch it. It was entertaining. But, I mean, really, you know, you really think he meant that? I mean, Canelo's on Mexican TV, like, nonstop. You don't think he knows how to play to the cameras a little bit? You don't
exactly.
think he knows what to say? Come on, you know?
That's what I'm saying,
is,
you know?
What it is,
I mean, that's what I'm saying, you know? He, I think at the moment he's, like, you know, he made a shot at me. I'm going to take a shot at him, and then we're going to kind of roll with it and stuff, you know? I mean, Marquez coming up and him going, I don't know how that would even work out. I don't even know if Golden Boy would even allow that. I mean, they might, because the rumor is that Marquez is looking to leave Golden Boy so that he can have the opportunity, like the way Shane Mosley has, against Manny Pacquiao. You know, so many things there that there's possibilities. But does Canelo want to mix it up with Marquez? I mean, you know what? There's that old saying, man, be brave, but don't be stupid.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I don't really understand. I mean, on some level, you know, I mean, Marquez is promoted by Golden Boy. And so is Canelo. I mean, it's like Mark was saying, it's amazing that all these people agreed to do it. But, you know, look at what the WBC is doing for Golden Boy. They're getting him this title shot. Suleiman is no stranger to the camera. I mean, how hard really was it to get all these people to agree to do this thing? And it was a nice, you know, promotional buzz for them. It created some stories. People talked about it, and everybody went kind of crazy. I mean, it kind of seems pretty obvious to me, you know, exactly what was happening. To answer the guy's question in the chat, I recorded this on my iPhone 4. That's how I do most of my audio. But you're in a gym, and
yeah.
People are hitting bags, and there's a ton of people. I mean, I first walked into that gym, the Westside Boxing Gym around Pico, and I was like, great, so this is basically Manny Pacquiao Part 2. I'm not a huge fan of the big media crush and fighting with guys and elbowing people trying to get to another man and interview him about what kind of shape he's in. You know, that doesn't interest me. I prefer to do, you know, see my work, see the gym work, but maybe get the guy alone or get him on the phone and really get to the heart of the matter and try to talk to somebody and get them to know you a little better so they trust you. You can't really
Absolutely.
Get a lot out of it. I heard Oscar give me the same quote about, you know, it's not, you know, getting a belt is tough, but keeping it is tougher. He said that like 5-6 times that day, you know. That shit
right.
doesn't interest me, you know. So
exactly.
Sometimes you just kind of know. But man, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of media out there, and this is what we're going to look forward to. I mean,
is that kind of buzz. I mean, somebody else in the chat room was saying that, you know, Ryan Rhodes is not or Hatton is not a better fighter than Ryan Rhodes, and that's probably true. I've never thought much of Matthew Hatton at all. I always thought he was kind of a ham and egger, like, you know, but he's a name, and with him comes Ricky Hatton.
Exactly.
Ricky Hatton's dad, and these are people we all know from HBO, from 24/7. These are familiar faces that they can film, and general public goes, oh yeah, I know who that guy is, and they tune in somehow. Oh, is he fighting Canelo? You know, they don't know.
I mean, how do you think the storyline is going to be on Saturday night on HBO? You know, they're going to say, brother of a 140-pound king at one time, blah, 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 and they're going to, you know, roll in. Now his younger brother is looking to conquer the boxing world like his older brother. You know, I mean, it's this whole storyline. That's what it is, you know, and stuff. And us boxing fans, hardcore boxing fans, do we fall into that BS? No, we don't. But the guys that are casual, they will. They'll be like, hey, man, this is Ricky Hatton's brother. You know, this guy got to be good. It's not going to happen.
No, he doesn't.
You know. Right. Klitschko and David Haye. Vladimir Klitschko and David Haye are in talks of July 2nd date. You know, they're saying it's agreed on, but there's other folks saying, no, it's not agreed on. It is on the table. You know, they're looking to put up their IBF, WBO, IBO, and WBA title belts off the line. Man, that's a lot of bouts there and stuff, man. Talk about wanting to learn your ABCs. You know, just talk about all these titles and put them all in one spot. You're going to learn them, you know. But hopefully this fight goes through, you know. Vladimir Klitschko.
Believe it when I see it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm at. You know, this has been so many times in talks, man. It's just like, you know, just take her to the church and marry her already. You know, that's pretty much what it comes down to this fight here, man. I just want to – I really don't care about if they're close to it. Just tell me when it's there. Tell me when they finally put the rings on each other and they said you can now kiss the bride, you know. Then you know, then we'll be there and stuff. Hey, let's put on the interview with Ricky Hatton here talking to Gabriel Montoya and saying he's in great shape.
Yes, he is.
Gabriel Montoya with Max Boxing, man.
Pleasure to see you. You're looking well, man.
Great, yeah.
There is only one Ricky Hatton, man. Again.
You must be sick of that song still.
I still wake up some nights screaming. So how's retirement treating you, man?
Enjoying it, loving it now. I'm similar to like Oscar, who's had a moment in boxing like I have now. And once you've been a champion, the next best thing you can do is hopefully bring the champion along and bring fighters along. So I think that's what me and Oscar are both doing now. So I'm really, really enjoying it, yeah. So it's a lot less painful as well.
You started promoting in England now, right?
Yeah, I've got, out of all the promoters in England, I have the most crop of current champions. I've got about 13 champions now already in the 2 years I've been doing it, from British to Commonwealth to European to English. So it's going really, really well.
And you got your brother here who's got his title shot at 147. Everybody's making a big deal out of it, but we'll move past that. What do you think he's got to do to beat this kid? Have you seen him, Alvarez?
Yeah, very much so, yeah. I mean, Matthew's a massive underdog, and he understands that, but he certainly has no fear in taking this fight. He's a much improved fighter, a lot stronger, the European champion, and the advantage Alvarez will have, obviously, in the speed, in the power, I should say, Matthew will have in the speed, and who can put their game plan across, probably best in many ways. But Matthew is an underdog, and he's nothing like that. But I mean, I was an underdog years ago when I thought Kostya Zugai, and I was able to turn it around. Hopefully Matthew could do the same.
Yep, I wish I had money on this one like I did for you in that fight. What's been the hardest part of retiring? I mean, is it being a promoter and still part of the game, has that made it easier? I mean, is there anything that can ever replace 1,000 people chanting your song and going crazy for you?
No, that was the hard thing. I mean, after the Pacquiao fight and I decided to the blow it up, I had to deal with the fact that I was never going to get that buzz of having, you know, like the 30,000 fans that came over here to the Mayweather fight, you know, and 58,000 in City Manchester Stadium, and 22,000 across the zoo fight. You're never going to feel that again, and it's sometimes it's very, very hard to come to terms with, and then you you know, you could go up the rails a little bit from the middle of the moving forward, but back on track now, that's the main thing.
You think, I mean, you named all those numbers, and those were European numbers, and then the guys that came over here for you. When people in America say boxing's dying, is that just an American way of looking at the sport? Do you think worldwide it's still as strong as ever?
I think so, yeah. I mean, when you say, you know, pound for pound, you know, you got Mayweather and you got Manny Pacquiao, although they're not fighting each other type thing, at the minute. But, I mean, you know, you have to say Mayweather and Pacquiao will probably be up there with modern-day greats, maybe all-time greats even, you know. So, I think boxing's in a good state. It's very healthy and it's very healthy in England. So I'm not quite... Obviously, my knowledge of what it's like in the States is probably not as good as most, but I think boxing is in a very healthy state, yeah.
Last question. Do you think you guys can win a decision here, or are you going to have to knock him out or at least knock him down a few times?
Yeah, it's going to be hard. You know, he's coming to the, into his opponents, you know, front room, as they say, you know. And,
yeah.
He's moving up a weight division in order to fight him, but the opportunity come along, and I said, well, Matthew, you know, you don't have to take this opportunity. It's a way to move. You can carry on, you know, going down the welterweight road. But in the blink of an eye, he said, yeah, no problem. He said, it's a world title fight that you always dream of. He said, so let's have it. And one thing about myself and my brother, we never feared anyone, you know. So
he's
like he's made of the same cloth. Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, good luck to you guys. Pleasure to talk to you, man.
Yeah,
you know, the thing there is that when Ricky Hatton, Gabe, when you asked him, do you think you need to win by decision or knock him out, did you notice that his voice kind of went down lower? You know what I mean? Like, there was not a whole lot of confidence there, you know, for his brother. It's just like his tone just dropped a notch, you know? Like, he almost knew exactly what we were seeing, you know, and what we're thinking already, you know, what's going to happen at the Honda Civic Center in Anaheim on Saturday night. I don't know. Gabe, are you there or did you drop off? I see you're still on the line, brother. You got yourself on mute again?
I did. I was making some coffee. I'm sorry. I think there's a reason for... There's definitely a reason why I don't have money on Matthew Hatton the way I did have added on Ricky Hatton when he
fought
Costas too. I mean, you can definitely hear that change in his voice, and his body language was really interesting. It was like with Oscar, I know when he's bullshitting me because he loses eye contact. We'll be talking, and if you ask him something about his own career or about fighting, he'll talk to you, and he'll kind of make eye contact, and his body language becomes more confident. When he's bullshitting you, he kind of looks up to the left, kind of looks off, or looks anywhere but your eyes. And with Hatton, it was very strange because we were talking about, you know, all these different kind of subjects, and he would stay with me for a little bit. And when we got to that section, he was just kind of looking back and forth, kind of looking around. And it wasn't like he was trying to leave. Like, he didn't. We were like standing on the ring apron together, and he was, you know, I asked him before if we could go on record, and he was totally cool. We'd met before. It was just, like you say, like there's a lack of confidence. It's kind of like, look, man, my brother's going to get his ass handed to him. And, you know, this is a good paycheck, and I'm a promoter now. It is what it is.
Right.
And that's,
we're sacrificing the lamb here. You know, we're sacrificing the lamb here. And unfortunately, it's got to be my brother that I got to put up there to pay the bills. I mean, that's really honestly what I was hearing out of him. And, you know, it's a cold, cold reality. But, you know, in order to pay the bills and in order to keep yourself striving, and his brother definitely is a guy that's been in the game for a minute trying to get himself out there, get a name for himself, and by far you would have to say this is his biggest purse here. So, you know, Ricky in a lot of ways is helping him out get this purse, you know, and get this money for him. So, I mean, but...
Yeah.
Let's break down this fight really quick, you know, because we do got a couple other things that we got to post up on the radio show. You know, we did have the opponent of Sergio Martinez. I had a chance to interview him one-on-one and be able to put it up on Leaving the Ring so you guys get to hear what he has to say about his upcoming fight on the 12th, on March 12th here. But also, you know, Ricardo Mayorga, man, again, that guy had plenty to say about Miguel Cotto, and it was hilarious. Hilarious stuff. But really quick, what do you see happening with Saul Alvarez Canelo against Matthew Hatton on Saturday night?
You know, it's it's an intriguing fight on that level of what is actually going to happen, because I don't, you know, I remember watching Canelo early on and thinking this kid is different, and I liked his differences. You know, he doesn't fight like a typical Mexican guy. He likes to counterpunch. He cares about defense a little bit more, or in a different, more American kind of way.
Right.
The last few fights, you know, the Baldwin fight, I thought looked fine, but he was fighting a dead guy. You know, he was fighting a guy that hadn't won one in a good one in a while, and was old already. You know, and then the Lovemore Andu fight, I was totally bored. I know he won it from pillar to post, but it was just, he looked slow, footwork wasn't the greatest. He looked like he regressed, and maybe it's because Andu is just a little bit better opponent, but he's also a small guy. You know, that's not really they fought, I think, at 150 pounds that fight. I don't really understand why he looked so bad. And he told me that it was the style, but I don't know. Maybe he's just an ordinary guy who's kind of hit his ceiling, you know. He's still 20, though, so there's going to be these peaks and valleys, I think. But there's nothing – to me, he's just a Chavez Jr. with a better work ethic. He's just kind of an ordinary guy who happens to like fighting and fights in a different way. But if he didn't have red hair and freckles and kind of look like a white guy but be Mexican, we probably wouldn't care, like, at all.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So getting to the fight, I think he wins a 12-round decision. I don't think it's very exciting. I think Hatton, being a Hatton, is going to do just enough to extend the fight. He might get cut. He does get cut, but, you know, we'll see. You know, I think he also holds on, and we go all the way, you know.
You know, the thing is that it's going to be – you're going to have action in this fight, you know, with Han and, you know, Alvarez. But the kind of action that is kind of more or less what we saw with DeMarco and Sanchez, you know, where it's a little dirty. You're going to have your moments, but you're not going to see a whole lot of crisp shots. You're going to see him from Alvarez. He's, you know what I think – what I like about Alvarez, and you know, and you brought up a great point. He's a counterpuncher, and he's got a tremendous right hand, you know. But it looks like, you know, that him even moving up in weight and stuff, that right hand does land when he throws it and when he times it and when he looks to counter with it and stuff. But it just doesn't do a lot of damage, you know, like the way he was doing before. But that's because he was fighting guys that had literally like 14 losses, you know, and 11 knockouts on their record, and then they were getting in with Alvarez, you know. Matthew Hatton, granted, is not in talent category with Alvarez and stuff, but he's definitely going to give him a good scrap. He's a guy that can really kind of trouble him. He's a guy that's going to come forward, a guy that's going to be active and stuff. But I could see Alvarez getting a little overexcited and make it a little harder than when he needs to, then eventually I see in the later rounds when he settles down and he decides to sit down on those punches and he likes to throw that uppercut when he's in the inside, because we've seen him, you know, when he does settle down and he decides to sit on his punches, he mixes up his punches well. I mean, he goes from the body back to the head, back to the body, really good there, Gabe, you know what I mean? He did it with Miguel Cotto's brother, Jose Cotto. He did it really well and stuff, but even with that fight there, he said the stage of America kind of threw him off. And if that's the case, I think the stage in Anaheim could throw him off as well, where you could see him look like he's in danger, but kind of take over in the late rounds. And I'm going to go with you, too. I think he wins by decision, but I wouldn't be surprised that if he stops, you know, Matthew Hatton on a cut or so.
Yeah, you know, that's as good an assessment. I think this time he'll handle it better, being a headliner. I think he's ready for that. He's been a headliner several times. I think it was just kind of through him being in Vegas is a different animal, you know. And, I mean, they also, you know, he looked pretty ordinary in that fight. He got hurt a lot by Jose Cotto. He blamed it. He was like, I really wasn't that hurt. It was the moment. And I'm kind of like, you know, no, dude, you were hurt. I was you actually got hit on the side of the ring that I was at for press row. He was hurt. I don't think there's any chance of that happening with Hatton. I mean, he's more of a – he's not really quite like the mauler that Ricky is. He's a little more technical. His punches are a little cleaner. But he's not a power guy at all. So I don't think there's any really chance, unless Canelo has a bad chin that we don't know about. I don't think there's a chance of him coming back or hurting him in this fight.
No, I don't think so either.
On some level. Yeah, like you said, early on, and then it'll level out.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and like I said, you know, he's 20 years old. You know, and you're absolutely right. Vegas is a completely different beast and stuff, but it's still interested in how well he's going to – because really, he's headlining it, and it's going to be on HBO, and that alone already is a different beast. We saw that happen with Victor Ortiz, you know, where – but Victor was in with a guy that had such a big punch, where with Alvarez, I think Golden Boy learned their lesson, and they're saying, hey, we're going to have it again. We're trying to bring up this guy. Let's put him in with more or less of a threat here and stuff, you know. Real quick news here. Noche de Boxeo has been moved from our block talk here to another one. So some people that are wondering what happened on Noche de Boxeo, they were trying to tune in on Monday. You got to type in Noche de Boxeo because they have their own soul thing. And there's a reason why we did that. You know, it's because we have something in the works that should be coming about in the end of this month. I don't want to announce it like that because, you know, we just don't want to do that. But our sponsor, My Boxing Fans, has came up with something I think that a lot of people are going to appreciate and like. And as soon as that is done, we'll definitely let you know. But you'll be able to catch both shows when this project that we're doing is at the end of the month here. So just to let people know, and Noche de Boxeo is still running strong, got great guests. You know, they had Giovanni Segura on just last week, and then they had the Baby Bull come on to talk about whether or not he's going to hang up the glove. So please tune in and support Noche de Boxeo, siempre en español, siempre en boxeo. So continue doing that with them and stuff, and continue, you know, supporting us. Don't leave us behind, you know. But really quick, you know, the opponent of Sergio Martinez is going to be facing March 12th, Sergey. You know, I'm not going to even attempt his last name because I don't even say it as good as Gabriel here. So, Gabe, go ahead. What's his last name?
Sergey Zinzurek.
Zinzurek. Okay.
Or Zinzurek. It depends on how fast you want to say it, but yeah.
Right. Zinzurek. But it has a D, which kind of throws – I think that's what throws a lot of people off and stuff.
Just
kind of
ignore the Z. Yeah, you got to ignore the D.
Yeah, exactly. And he had a lot of interesting things to say. Having Buddy McGuirk on his corner, we had a chance to speak to Buddy and Sergey about his upcoming fight, and this is what they had to say.
You're listening to Lean in the Ring. You're listening to Lean in the Ring.
The main event, you know, Sergio Martinez, my middleweight champion, one of the best fighters in the world, pound for pound. This is another beast being put in front of him. I think it was the fifth time in a row. I never liked this fight. I'm going to admit that. And the reason I like the fight is not disrespect for Sergey Zinzurek, but total respect. He's technically one of the best fighters I've ever seen. He's got a tremendous jab, tremendous defense. He doesn't make mistakes. I'm sure Buddy McGuirk, who's training him now, will mention that. But this kid is very, very sound stylistically, very, very difficult to beat. Frankly, I understand HBO wanted to test Sergio and put him in the toughest fight possible. My objection to the fight is this is the toughest fight possible and probably the toughest opponent that Sergio Martinez has ever faced. You know, my objection is Sergey's not that well known here, and I would have preferred a fight of this degree of difficulty to take place when Sergey had already been seen a few times in the States and people recognized just what a threat he is. But I have tremendous respect for him. I think he is the best 54-pounder right now out there. I think this is a terribly difficult fight for Sergio and one that, in truth, I probably would have preferred not to fight based upon styles and timing and everything else. But it's going to be very competitive. HBO is going to have a great competitive fight on their hands. I'm worried. I'm looking forward to a great fight. I have faith in my champion, but I understand what a challenge this is.
You're listening to Lean in the Ring. You're listening to Lean in the Ring.
Sergey is the best junior middleweight out there. He's 37-0, 24 knockouts. He's never lost. He doesn't know how to lose. And it's not like he's been a protected guy. I mean, he's fought the best. He's defended his title 7 times. And he's made a concerted effort to come over here to fight the best. And he's done it. He's here. It's his time. And, you know, Lou recognizes that. Sergio Martinez's team recognizes it. It's evident by his training and how serious Sergio is taking it. You know, and all credit to Sergio in that he didn't take a soft touch after Paul Williams. And, you know, he's going about it the right way. He recognizes the danger that Sergey's bringing to this fight, and he's going all out. I mean, you know, bringing in top sparring and bringing in guys that Sergey has beaten in the past, you know, all smart moves. But it does speak to how the Martinez team really thinks about Zindzirik and what he's bringing to the table in this fight. And, you know, we have complete confidence in Sergey. We think he's going to be bringing his A game, as that's all he knows how to bring.
You're listening to Leaving the Ring. You're listening to Leaving the Ring.
How you doing, guys? My question is to Buddy McGirt. Buddy, a lot of fight fans don't really know a whole lot about Sergey. Could you tell us what is he going to bring to the table, and how are you going to use his style to oppose against Sergio Martinez?
Well, it's like this. He does everything precise. You know, I mean, with his punches, you know, he doesn't waste any shots. You know, I mean, you think he has a typical European style, but he doesn't. I mean, he's got a phenomenal jab and a better left hand. So I just think that what he does and what we've added on, I just think that is going to show the difference in the fight.
Does it make it harder to get a guy that's technically sound to fight a guy that is more awkward in style-wise?
If you've seen the guys he's been sparring, you would say no. Because, I mean, we've had some guys that were more awkward than Sergio. I mean, and after a couple of rounds, he figured him out, and, you know, it took him a round or two, but once he did, that was it. They, you know, they were dancing to his beat.
Could you name a couple of the guys that he's been sparring with?
Yeah, ex-Harry, I can't pronounce their names. A lot of them are under the radar.
Well, I don't know them. Cornelius, I don't know the kid's last name, one of them. Then we got, Russian kid, David Tabatadze. That was a kid. He just come back from Ukraine. He won the contender show over there. David Tabatadze. We got this Cornelius. I'm sorry, I don't know his last name. Then obviously we got we're boxing with Craig, who's on the co-feature. He's in a
McEwen,
yeah, Craig McEwen, who is a great work for Sergio, for Sergey, and of course for Craig. And there was another kid with named Troy. I don't know his last name. So we have a pretty good sparring.
Yeah, pretty good roster there. Yeah, definitely and stuff. My last question is for Sergey: is that what about Sergio Martinez that impresses you, and what about Sergio Martinez that doesn't impress you?
Okay. Что для Сочи Мартинес, ты думаешь, очень хорошо, отлично, такой, за что, что очень плохо для него, такой радость.
Я
думаю,
что хорошо, что плохо, да, я
да.
Буду делать.
Но нет, Мартинес, что он хорошо делает, что он очень плохо делает, такой радость у него. One second.
No problem.
It's a very kind of unique question, so he's thinking.
Так, может, тяжело сразу ответить, как бы, однозначно, да, что хорошо, что плохо. У нас есть, у меня есть, у тренера Бади, мы выработали наш план на бой, то, что мы отрабатываем, то, что мы готовим для Мартинеса, потом какие-то неожиданные сюрпризы, то, что он не ожидает. Я думаю, что, конечно же, мы будем больше делать внимание на скорость, на быстроту, то есть на хитрость.
Right.
И плюс держать высокий темп поединка.
Well, you said it's kind of difficult to answer that question, but with Buddy McGirt, that we have our game plan, we're not really thinking what Sergio's going to do. We're just looking at what we're going to do. And obviously, it's going to be a lot of surprises on the fight, and it's going to be a lot of pressure. That's what it's going to win the fight. We got to put a lot of pressure on Sergio, so that's what we're looking into it.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. You guys have a great fight.
Thank you.
You know, a really, really, really tough fight here for Sergio Martinez, and a lot of people not really knowing anything about Sergey. That I've had guys, you know, hit me up here, Gabe, and I'm pretty sure yourself as well, go like, you know, this should be an easy fight for Martinez, and I'm like, wow, I don't think so. This is a good.
I didn't say it'd be
fight.
Easy. I said he'd stop him in 10. I didn't think it would be easy. He's gonna have to get past that stick. He's perfect to be with Buddy McGirt because that's his, you know, it's his catchphrase. You got to work the jab, baby. You got to stay off the jab. Everything off the jab, and that's what he'll be doing. is jabbing. He doesn't, you know, he's not the guy that's looking. I find it interesting that they say we're gonna have to put a lot of pressure because when you talk to Martinez and you watch him in the gym, that's all he's doing is. Working
yeah.
pressure, and his inside game and really his mid-range game has gotten better over the years, and he used to be more of a guy that would dance around the edges, and you look at that Cintron fight, you know, it was kind of stinky, and he's stepped up his excitement level a little bit. You know, I think the Bonima fight was a nice mix of movement and pressure and some good violence mixed in, you know, and certainly the Williams fight is unforgettable, so both of them. I think if Sergey thinks he's going to pressure Martinez, he's going to he may get out of there in 7 or 8 like Martinez thinks. I think he's going to go back to his natural state, which is to box and to move and try to control distance with that jab. You know, that's going to be the key for him, to make Martinez pay every time he comes in.
You know, the thing too is that what Martinez, what I've seen him, you know, working on is that he has great timing in his counterpunching. You know, that he really allows you to throw your punches, and he doesn't necessarily slip them. He pulls back, and he counters right off of you, you know. And that's the thing about Sergey, is that if he's going to pressure him, he's going to have to pressure him smart, you know, where he's going to have to feint a little bit more than anything because he's going to be countered. And that's what's going to – that's the thing, too, here, Gabe, is that – Sergey and them are talking about pressuring him and possibly trying to push him back. I think it's going to be the pushing is when Sergey finally realizes the hand speed, which Sergey definitely has good hand speed himself, but the timing that Martinez brings to the table, it's going to be the telling there where you see him walking back because it's going to be a little confusing, I think. I mean, that's my opinion. I think it's going to be a little confusing when Sergio Martinez decides to do the little herky-jerk and counter shots.
Well, that's the thing that's interesting about them. And you got two southpaws fighting each other. But, you know, Martinez has obviously had some good success with southpaws, particularly Paul Williams. I don't know how many southpaws Zenzirik has fought. And I'm curious to see if he can deal with that kind of look because, you know, most southpaws are used to seeing right-handed guys. And so they get used to doing the things that work well against them. Not everybody's used to seeing a guy that matches up straight up with you, you know, the way right-handers are used to matching up with each other. And I'll be curious to see if Zenzirik will be moving to his left, as he should be, or trying to work his way over there for the power. He's an intelligent fighter, so I imagine he would, and an experienced amateur, no doubt. So, you know, I'm sure he's faced some southpaws, but I'll be really curious to see who makes the adjustments. And Martinez, you know, my interview and piece will be out on him next week. Our video will be coming out of our trip there. He just seems to be in his zone right now, you know, where he's just peaking at
the
right
time.
Part.
Yeah. That's the scary
yeah,
part
really...
where he, you know, I mean, if you think of him when you barely saw him with Alex Bonima, right? It was like he was comfortable, but he was still finding himself, you know what I mean? And then he gradually, little by little by little by little, being on the stage numerous times. You know, it's like almost you're seeing a singer get up on stage, and little by little, you just see him building more confidence. When now you go see him, and I had a chance to go see him in Oxnard as well and stuff, I just saw a completely different guy, you know, where his confidence was there, and he was still working on his craft, but he was already comfortable with a game plan in his head, you know what I mean, and what he was going to execute and what he was going to work on. And that's when you have to really look at, this is the scary part about the guy, is that he's finally found who he really is. And when a guy does that, he's more prone of you know, experimenting with things that he's worked on the gym and not hesitate in doing those things in performance-wise.
You know what's weird, too, is I mean, these guys are actually right near each other in age. And Zurich is 35. Martinez is 36 now.
Right.
And he just had a birthday. So, but their reach, you know, Zurich is a six-footer. Martinez is 5'11", somewhere around there, 5'10", you know, 5'11 on a good day. But his reach is listed at 76 inches. Zurich's reach is listed at 68 inches, which is kind of weird, you know. And you look at Martinez, he does got this kind of long arms to him, and he's got, a different makeup. And the thing that I was asking him about, you know, why he was successful with southpaws, and he was saying, well, I'm kind of an unorthodox southpaw on top of being a southpaw. So I'm not your typical guy. You know, the way he moves, everything, the way he approaches things is very original. He's got his own style. And when I look at Zurich, he's a very straight up and down European guy. He was the guy that they were looking for when they instead chose Dmitry Pirog to fight Danny Jacobs. They should have got this guy. If that's what they were looking for, a straight up and down Euro that if you improvise on him, he's going to have some problems dealing with it. This is the guy, in my opinion. He's a hell of a fighter, but I'm going with Martinez in this. After seeing him in the gym and then kind of taking some time to think about it, watch some tape, I say 10th round stoppage.
You know, I'm leaning with Sergio Martinez too, but I'm not. I'm definitely not going to overlook what Zergi's going to be bringing to the table at all. That stick jab is going to be something else too. And if Buddy McGirt, which he's had his trouble in training his fighters, you know. If he's got him correctly, he's going to be having him fight off of that jab, but also blinding Martinez off of that jab so he can get down a straight left cross down the pipe. But like I said, that's what Martinez is going to be looking for. That's what Martinez is going to be timing. So you got to be smart and you got to be sneaky, especially with a guy like Martinez who's very, very awkward. I don't think a lot of people know how hard it is to box an awkward fighter like Martinez, okay? And, you know, and I know some people have made comparisons of Martinez in the beginning of being Roy Jones. If you thought he was a lot like Roy Jones in the beginning when he fought Alex Bonima, you're definitely now going to have to go back and go, yeah, he's a lot like Roy, where he's not conventional, he's not your traditional fighter. He's in his own zone at this moment. So I got Martinez winning, but I'm not sure if it's going to be a stoppage game. I think he's going to just beat him. I think he's going to shut him out. But there's going to be some scary moments for Zurgi. I think Zurgi is going to find out I'm in with a world-class guy. Because he did say, you know what, I don't see nothing special about him. You're going to find something special about him, trust me.
Oh, yeah, no, he's an excellent fighter. I think this fight's really under the radar. People don't really – he also had a lot of inactivity. You know, he kind of sat on the shelf for a minute. He had an injury from, you know, in 2008 to 2010, he was on the shelf. And – That was a bit of, you know, that's why he kind of fell off. And for a long time, I considered him to be the best 154-pounder in the world, that nobody would really deal with him. And he had that, that WBO belt for a long time. And then I think Paul Williams was the guy that he picked up a vacant version of it. And then Zurich was back, and he's like, all right, let's do this thing. And they didn't want any part of that guy. There's a reason for that. So
absolutely.
And maybe that's because he's not that known. And Paul Williams, luckily for him, has Al Haymon in his corner, unlike Sergio Martinez, who doesn't. And so, you know, HBO doesn't exactly treat him the way they've treated Martinez here and said, here, take this guy that nobody wants to fight. And, you know, you fought nothing but tough fights on our network and always been the underdog, and we forced a catch weight on you at less money. And we introduced you first, even though you're the champ. But we're going to make you fight another tough one in a row. That's HBO's gratitude. It's a strange thing that he's a loyal man, and that speaks to his character.
Definitely speaks to his character and stuff, you know. And like I said, you know, we might have a different change of heart next week when it gets closer to the fight. But as of this moment right now, Sergio Martinez, I think, is going to take this. But it's going to be an exciting fun fight March 12th. I mean, it's a very dangerous fight for him to take on Zurgi, but same thing with Zurgi. I think he's going to be finding something out really about himself in this matchup here when they get into the ring on March 12th.
Yeah, I can't wait. I think it's going to be a good fight, and everybody's going to be talking about Cotto Mayorga and the, you know, all the bluster there with Mayorga, but that's, you know,
That's just gonna be a fun event.
It's gonna be a fun fight. Yeah, definitely.
A fun event, a fun fight. And really quick, I'll even put up the you know, what Mayorga had a message for Miguel Cotto. And here it goes from Leaving the Ring.
Primero que nada, decir que le digan a Miguel Cotto, ¿verdad? Que lo voy a mandar al equipo de Ricky Marte, decirle donde se lo merece estar ahí.
Message to Miguel Cotto, very simple. After I retire from boxing, I spoke to Ricky Martin's camp, and they have an opening for him there, and that's exactly where he belongs. So he can go work for Ricky Martin after he retires from boxing, after I retire him.
You know, I'm kind of excited about that. If he's going to hook him up back with Ricky Martin, they could form the Menudo group again. You know what I'm saying?
Wow. He doesn't run out
you
of
know,
trash talk.
He doesn't. The guy's got a book for dummies when it comes to jokes. I mean, you know, we thought that James Toney was gifted, man. You know, James Toney was more F you and F that. Ricardo Mayorga is just creative. You know what I mean? He's really creative when he trash talks, you know. And the guy hasn't skipped a beat, even from getting a hellacious beat down from Trinidad and De La Hoya and getting knocked out, you know, how many seconds left on the 12th round against Sugar Shane Mosley. You'd think that some of his barons would have left him already, but the guy's still sharp when it comes to doing his capping thing. You know, I like to see him in a tournament of your mama. You know, your mama was this, your mama was that. I mean, I think he'd be an all-time champion there.
Yeah, he's absolutely ridiculous. But he's a promoter's dream, you know, because he keeps coming back. He's had more comebacks than Cher. You know, and no matter how many times he gets beaten up, you know, there he is again. You know, and he's – people – it's kind of funny. You know, people kind of buy into his hype. Like, the longer a promotion goes, it's like people's, you know, allergies to bullshit kind of go away, and they slowly kind of buy in. And like, you know what? Maybe Mayorga has a shot. And some ways, you know – maybe he does, like early on. I think he's going to be a little dangerous just because he's sharp. He's shaking off the rust. But I don't know. We can get more into this, you know, next week as we get closer to the fight. I kind of want to, we're running out of time. We get to the schedule, but I want to talk about De Leon versus Broner because I think this is a really intriguing fight. I mean, you got a 21-year-old kid, you know, who's making it, like Mark said, a huge leap up in class from fighting John Revish and fighting eight-rounders. He's fought 3 10-rounders, but really not, you know, he hasn't fought world-class opposition. And speaking with Andrew Williams, his co-promoter, they were saying, you know, the Ohio Commission's a little tougher. And that's what he said on the radio show, you know, here when
right.
he was our guest. And they did match him, you know, a little tougher. And I kind of delved into some of those records, and then they're right. Some of these guys were good opposition. But Ponce de Leon's a whole different animal. And I question – I'm picking Broner to win by decision, but maybe late stoppage. You know, if he might overwhelm Ponce with speed and power. But I, you know, that was my pick on Monday on the next round.
Hmm.
The more I look at it, dude, the more this week goes along, and talking with Dub, I was like, you know, he had answers for like all the mistakes that he saw on tape, and he explained how he was fast, but not fast. You know, like he's kind of quick in his movements, but he's not consistent in his offense. He waits a long time, and they think that the experience of for the moment is gonna work against him. He likes to kind of pose and showboat a little bit more, whereas De Leon's like he's a classic workman. He's a little more patient now, kind of waits for his spots, knows how to set the foundation to the body, and then come upstairs. I would not be surprised if we get a little bit of an upset here.
You know,
I'm still picking Broner to win by decision, but it's not going to be easy, dude.
You know, I like this matchup a whole lot. You know, you got Broner, who's a guy that is 19-16. You know, he's definitely he in the boxing department. You got to sway with him, but Ponce de Leon is just not that. He's almost in his own category, you know what I mean? He's southpaw, very awkward, and you're right, he's not the fastest guy, but he is accurate when he does land those punches, you know what I mean? He looks for it, and he sometimes can hesitate, which would probably be his downfall against Broner, where Broner can capitalize on that. But two, Ponce de Leon to me has been in with you know, guys that are a little quicker than him, who are they going to decide and trade with him. and he could take advantage of it. Broner's just got to come in with an A game plan, which is not believe his power of being 16 KOs out of 19 fights. He's got to be smart about it and understand, don't come in as a puncher, come in as a boxer and box intelligent. Frustrate Daniel Ponce de Leon. Make Daniel Ponce de Leon commit. Make him lean in. Make him overcommit like the way Juanma Lopez did, you know, and that's when you can catch him and stuff, you know. I can see how you're saying it's an upset. I think a lot of people are overlooking Broner in this fight, you know, but I think that Ponce de Leon is going to have a lot of problems with Broner, and the only way I see him being able to take over what Broner is going to bring is make Broner get into a slugfest with him, and that's by pressuring him and cutting the ring off and just, you know, zoning him down all the way down to the corner and stuff. But I haven't made my pick on this fight yet, not just yet.
Yeah, it's a toss up because it's, you know, you find out just what does the kid have? Is he really the goods? You know, and I don't know if people have really even seen him. He's an interesting guy. He loves you know, Sweet Pea Whitaker. Roy Jones is kind of in that repertoire, though. You can see it. But he's got some kind of swagger of kind of like an Aaron Pryor almost. I mean, he's just kind of, when I said, we talked about, you know, the length of rounds and are you worried about going to deep water? And I was talking to him last night, and he was like, you know, I don't mind that at all. You know, I want, that's what I actually want, so I can beat on a guy some more. You know, I like it to go longer. And, you know, it was kind of like he's just got this kind of confidence to him that might just be born out of I've never been really tested or hurt or, you know, I've never had a loss. And so it's kind of confidence coming from, you know, ignorance is probably a bad word, but you know what I mean, inexperience.
Right.
Or he's really that good. And at 21, he's, you know, he's had over like 340 fights, something like that, you know, amateur and now pro. And he's just got that kind of confidence. I tend to think he's more of an athlete in some sense at times than boxer. And especially as the fights go on, his technique goes out the window. There was one move in particular that Dub showed me that he does. He kind of leans back and throws this hook and leaves him open to some things. And, you know, they showed me the move that they were going to do. You know, I can't really act it out on the radio, but basically look for a jab to the stomach and then a counter hook, which is
right.
Not what you're really looking for from Ponce de Leon. You're usually looking for that other, you know, the right hand. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, is this kid's athleticism and youth, you know, and all the things that come along with it, that speed, power, his size, because he's a bigger guy and fighting de Leon out of his weight class, will those things be able to make up for his inexperience and his flaws? You know, will he be able to get through? I don't know. You know, and we don't know about the chin yet.
The thing, too, about Ponce de Leon is that on any given fight night, the guy can lose. I mean, he has been, you know, I mean, he has sharpened up the tools, but there's so much there that needs to be added and needs to be fine-tuned that he makes it just that more difficult to say, can he be completely dominant? You know what I mean? Antonio Escalante going in there with him just made the fault move of standing and trading with him and believing he can bang with him. Broner, I'm not sure if he's going to really believe in that power. And if he does, that's the only thing that I'm thinking. The youth there may tell him to do something that's not going to be too smart. Where Ponce de Leon is a little bit older and a little bit more wiser and a little bit more patient and understanding what happened to him in the past, that he's going to execute the way you should execute, you know. So it is a really good telling story of a fight here. I mean, you got two guys here with really good confidence and one guy undefeated, another guy that's just trying to get himself back into the mix and has been thrown to the dogs to see whether or not he can get back in with the bigger names out there and stuff. So really good fight here. I can't wait to see it happen. You know, occasionally, you know, we do bag on Golden Boy about their matchmaking, but occasionally they do get it right. Trust me. And this is one of those matches that they did get right. This is going to be a good fight.
Yeah.
I like this fight a lot.
Well, this is a tough one too. It's that, you know, they do the step up fight. They could either, you know, get all the credit in the world for putting on a good fight, or get lambasted for you know, putting this kid in too soon with a killer like Ponce de Leon. And it should be noted, too, that I wasn't exactly sure which fights they were, but somebody was telling me that Broder's actually missed this weight a couple times, and he's normally a lightweight. You know, he normally fights about 135, sometimes 137, up in there. He's a big kid at 5'7". Bones de Leon's like 5'5". He's more of a, you know, a featherweight.
Right.
And they're meeting in the middle at 130. So I'm very curious that Bonsai might actually just be very comfortable at this weight. He's fighting very well right now. I mean, he beat Cornelius Locke, who's a – that was a good fight. It was a tough
fight
for him.
That was a good fight for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Good
and,
fight.
And you look at that and go, he can deal with speed. He can deal with awkwardness. And as that fight went on, you saw Locke's kind of technique going out the window. He's a little more of an athlete type. And Bonsai turned, you know, took over that fight with technique. We actually were saying that, like, I can't believe he's actually outboxing somebody. This is kind of amazing. And then, you know, his next two fights, you know, he blew out Antonio Escalante in two rounds, and it was a pretty devastating knockout.
Right.
It's a legitimate fight, and this is kind of a traditional catch weight fight. You got a guy at one weight and at another weight. They meet in the middle at a different weight class, and they get it on. I can't wait. You know, it kind of makes it – the Canelo fight, you know, is what it is. It's kind of a weird fight. Hopefully it's exciting at the very least. The title, we've already discussed all that. When I heard this fight was going to be on another card, I was like, I can't believe either side made this fight. This is awesome.
Yeah.
This is going to be a treat. This could be a treat.
And you know what? Thinking right now, and you're going with Broner, I'm going to go with Ponce de Leon. I think the Cornelius Locke is a great example of him dealing with speed and dealing with somebody that can box. I mean, Cornelius Locke was a guy that Eloy Flores' people didn't want to get in the ring at the time because he was a southpaw and he was a boxer, you know, a guy that could really make you look terrible. But with Ponce de Leon, he figured him out and you know, in terms of skill level, it's not the sharpest. But when it comes to figuring out things, you know, he definitely knows how to put the puzzle together. And I like what Ponce de Leon brings, and he has sharpened them up. Are they the sharpest tools that he's done? No. But they're not dull tools. They're not dull tools. They do have some razor through it, and he's shown that against Cornelius Locke, and he's shown it against Antonio Escalante. So I like that fight. I'm going to go with Ponce de Leon. I think that what's going to happen is just going to be the cat chasing the mouse, and then finally the cat finally gets the gift and gets the mouse. Tom and Jerry, but with Tom finally getting Jerry.
You know, what I like about tonight's show is we have not agreed on one fight. We both picked on either side. It's going to be awesome.
We normally do that. And you know what's funny is that we normally do that a lot. You know, we don't agree on particular things, and but we don't end up making videos about each other and getting upset. And we do, and then we end up calling each other and say like, oh, man, you were right about that. Oh, I didn't see that. That's the beauty of boxing. You know, people take this – they forget this is a sport, and this is a sport that we love. Me and you, Gabe, we can definitely sit there and say we love this sport unconditionally, you know. But I think what people forget that boxing, you know, which is a great line you say all the time, you know, fights are won in the ring, not on paper, you know. And I think that's what a lot of people forget. That's why we tune in, and that's why we watch it. I hate for sure things, and I always say if it's a for sure thing, I don't want to watch it. You know, I'll just catch it on the DVR. But that's why I watch boxing live, so I can see something, be excited, and not catch the news after. Because I hate seeing the news after. It just doesn't make it that exciting for me to try to tune in after when the whole world has already saw it, and they're just telling me on a couple of letters.
That's true. It was funny, too, speaking to, you know, we don't make videos about each other, but you have a funny way. When you're right, you have funny timing about rubbing it in. Like, the fight happened on Saturday. I don't get a text till midnight, like 2 days later. You know, did I call that or what? Like, you catch me doing like something random. I get this text like, oh, you bastards. Like, you haven't answered my call in like a day, but there you are. Yes, you got it right.
Yeah, definitely. After a few beers, man, having some of that, then the tiger blood starts boiling, and then I get Gabe. But I really quick, because we only got like 6 minutes left, you know, a big shout out for the winners, they're going to go to Solo Boxeo. They're going to be seeing Vicente Escobedo step back into the ring, you know, in Fantasy Springs in Indio, California. And a good friend of ours, Randy Caballero, who's going to be on the undercard there, among other fighters. I don't know if we have a whole lot of time here to throw out the fight schedule, but I think we covered pretty much everything that's going to be happening on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'll knock out the Friday night. March 4th, Friday night at the in Kimisee, Florida. How about we'll just say that. ESPN2, Ismael Silak, 14-0 versus Jordanas de Spain, 8-0.
I'm a little excited about seeing Ismael back into the ring, you know. It's been a minute since we saw him. He was on the undercard, I believe, of the Roy Jones and Bernardo Hopkins fight, right?
Right, right. God, you maybe remember that fight. This is a toss-up one. Ask me on Twitter, and I'll tell you. I've been breaking down tape. I still haven't decided.
Yeah.
I watched Spain in the gym against Javier Torres and the Matadors, and it was actually a pretty cool little session. And this is a tough fight to call. We'll just get to the schedule. We got like 7 minutes.
Right.
Underneath that is Ray Nahr, 24-1 versus Freddie Norwood. Freddie Norwood, wow, really? 43-3-1. Make it less horrible. At Fantasy Springs Casino, Indio, California, Telefutura, Vicente Escobedo, 22-3 versus Walter Estrada, 38-13-1. I'm going with the upset special on this one. I'm going with Estrada. Telefutura, Dave, you got a pick?
I'll ask you on Twitter.
Randy Caballero is on that card against Hugo Ramos. Sharif Bogier, 18-0 versus Shamir Reyes, 18-8-2. And that's about it for that card. At the Warner Center Marriott, Woodland Hills, California, Yusef Mack, 28-3-2 versus Otis Griffin, 23-6-2. Raimundo Beltran takes on Carlos Binan in support there. And that's your Friday night TV schedule. And actually, the Warner Center is not on TV, but it is a local card, so you go check it out.
Yeah,
and then
Arts. What's the promotional company? It is, I have it into Arts Art of War, I think it is called, promotions.
Yes,
okay.
Art of War.
The Art of War and all that, based out of Glendale, California.
See, that's Karin. I always mess up his last name. I feel bad.
Yeah.
Armenian. I have trouble.
Armenian. Right.
If it's Russian, I'm good with it, but the Armenian's a little tough for me. and that is your weekend fight schedule.
Again, like always, you know, we appreciate the feedback, you know, really quick news and stuff. We are looking for photographers at East Coast and the West Coast and a guy that can do some filming for Leaving in the Ring. You know, we are always trying to expand everything that we do so we can get full coverage for the fight fans that do follow us on our website, leavingtheringcom, or our YouTube, whatever the case is. Definitely, please tune in to Noche de Boxeo and check out their website. It's all in Spanish, nochedeboxeo.com. Be sure to check out Gable Montoya at maxboxing.com on his mailbag and very in-depth articles. You know, somebody's out there asking, where are the real writers at? Hey, you got one right here on the radio show on Leaving the Ring, Gable Montoya. Again, brothers, have a great night. Gabe, I'll talk to you later, brother.
All right, man. And fight fans, enjoy the fights. And if you guys are down there in Anaheim, I'll be there ringside. Please, don't be shy. Say hello. Say what's up. And I'll see you at the fights.
There we go. Have a good night.